Hey, what's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? This is another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. Got a lot of stuff to talk about in the next few hours, so I hope you are ready for it. Talking about this Supreme Court case, the minimum wage stuff, Dumb Leap of the Week, all those things, and a whole lot more. But it's Black Bill Tuesday, so what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about this, first off, the Supreme Court thing, and then we're going to talk about a minimum wage law affecting Uber and Lyft and their decision to leave the place that did that. So that's actually a white pill for you. I thought about waiting for tomorrow.
I'm
for that.
Back.
Here we go, baby.
He is.
It's exactly what Charlie's been asking for, is for these people to just leave.
It's like when I see the women, they're like, we don't need men. I'm like, I hope all men quit. You know?
You want a general strike for men.
Mm-hmm, I do.
See society fall apart immediately until the machines take over, you know?
Yeah.
They won't need us anymore, but we have to build the machines. So actually, they'll probably get other machines to build those machines. So whatever, but we have to build those.
So and it's not like there aren't some women who can't, you know, fix sewers and stuff like that. It's just most don't.
Sure. Yeah, they're not going
to. Most won't.
Why would they fix a sewer when they have to teach today? So
anyway, this is a podcast called Good Morning Liberty. Whether or not it's a good morning, it doesn't matter, because that's the name of the show. And we talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of meaning, which we've kind of lacked on that last part a little bit.
Because, meaning?
Yeah, the whole meaning thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're pursuing it.
Yeah.
We just haven't found it yet, but I promise.
It's just a sad pursuit. You know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if your head hangs low as long as you're taking steps forward.
Yeah. Or if it wobbles to and fro.
Anyway, we do five shows a week whenever we feel like it. Or when we want to, and today's a day where we want to go to goodmorningliberty.us, find all kinds of fun things there. And if you want to be part of the live group and actually support Liberty, maybe, just maybe, with enough of you, we could actually move the needle in a direction towards making this country better. But so far, there hasn't been enough of it.
That's true.
So go to joingml.com. to be part of that. We've got some...
All right, everyone, do all those things, we'll be right back again tomorrow.
Actually have some really exciting things coming up.
Yeah, like you're giving a speech this weekend.
I'm giving a speech this weekend. We've got some other...
Did you decide which draft you're going to go with?
We got some other potential ways to connect with us coming up soon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
Can't talk about it yet, but we got some... There, we got some things in the
works. We're not going to talk about that. Don't let me forget we have to do two ads today. Okay.
Nate, don't forget we have to do two ads today.
Just let me know in a little bit.
I just let you know now.
And later than now.
Oh, you want me to remind you?
In like 10 minutes.
Later.
Something like that. Okay, listen, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court.
Like a true woman.
You guys know about this Supreme Court case. Did the Biden administration coerce companies into censoring Americans' speech? That is the question that they are taking up. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a little bit surprised by the Supreme Court's very much skepticism. I listened to it for about an hour this morning on my way here, and most of the justices are extremely skeptical of the case against the Biden administration and their censorship of speech on social media platforms. By most, I mean, honestly, it's like all but one. If you were to take a poll from the oral arguments yesterday, it could be an 8-1 decision in favor of the Biden administration. Maybe it'll come down 7-2, something like that. But it did not go, honestly, it did not go well. And so I'm a little bit surprised about that. I understand it a little bit more after listening to all of the arguments, because most of it comes down to do the plaintiffs have standing to be bringing this? And so they're asking a lot of questions about that. Does this amount to coercion? Does sending an email to someone amount to coercion when they're not saying, if you don't do this, we're going to do this?
Never mind that Section 230 was up for debate the whole time in Congress while this was happening.
People calling for antitrust enforcement against these companies, stuff like that. But it wasn't happening in those email chains. So was it coercion? That's kind of the question that we have. Suit alleging suppression of free speech met with skepticism at the U.S. Supreme Court. Let me go to the U.S. Supreme Court seemed skeptical Monday of a lawsuit alleging the federal government colluded with social media companies to suppress the freedom of speech, with a majority of justices across the ideological spectrum raising issues with the case and its potential consequences. The Biden administration argued to the court there is no evidence that the government violated the First Amendment in its effort to combat false, misleading, or dangerous information online. Beyond that, the court should dismiss the litigation because plaintiffs don't have the right to sue. That's standing, said Brian Fletcher, Principal Deputy Solicitor General. The lawsuit was filed in 2022 by two states, Missouri and Louisiana, and five individuals who either were banned from a platform or whose posts were not prominently featured on social media sites such as Facebook, YouTube, and X. Fletcher argued that the plaintiffs have not shown any evidence that decisions by social media companies to remove or deprioritize content can be attributed to the government. Instead, the companies made their own decisions, relying on their own content moderation policies.
Regardless of the emails specifically telling them to take certain posts down.
Yeah.
And the weekly meetings they had with government officials.
Those kind of things.
You know, if you work for a corporation, you have like these standing meetings. Or if you consult for corporations, it's the same thing. You have these weekly or daily stand-up, whatever. They literally had those with government agencies, like with the FBI. Mm-hmm. They had Twitter.
Yeah.
It all came out.
Yeah.
It's all there, the Twitter files. They had these literal standing meetings and about specific posts and specific people.
The argument would be that the social media companies did not disagree with what the government was bringing to their attention. And in fact, they were using the government as a separate department of people that they didn't have to hire, although they did pay the government for some of their consulting services, I believe, that they essentially didn't have to hire, that this was another department of people, say within Facebook, that was trying to find posts that were problematic. They would bring that to Facebook, and then Facebook would decide whether or not they agreed. In some instances, they said no, and in some instances, they said yes. And so what they're saying is they were actually working together. And while I disagree entirely with the argument and the implications and all of that, it's not entirely off base if you consider the fact that the people who work at Facebook are, well, some of the, especially in the case of Twitter, are former people who worked for the government and for the FBI, and also who are along the same ideological spectrum as what some of the people in the government were asking them, the people they were working with in the government. And so the question is, did they disagree with what the government was sending them, or were they thankful that the government sent them these things that they hadn't found yet? And the government just brought it to their attention. And therefore, they say, okay, yeah, well, no, we see that, and we're going to make the decision to remove this post. And was there any coercion behind it? Now, I think there's good examples.
Any threats? They didn't explicitly say, we'll take you to jail if you don't do this.
They're arguing that they didn't even implicitly say that they're going to do antitrust or 230 or anything like that. I think that there are some good arguments out there. Like if you talk about the Hunter Biden laptop, we have a couple different instances of Mark Zuckerberg saying that the FBI had come to him and said to be on the lookout for a Russian hack and leak operation. And when the Hunter Biden laptop came out, that's what they decided it was. And so they decided to censor that. And they might not have decided to censor that had the FBI not told them to be on the lookout for a Russian hack and leak operation. But guess what? The New York Post is not involved in this lawsuit. And Facebook is not one of the plaintiffs in this lawsuit. Twitter is not one of the plaintiffs in this lawsuit. And so RFK is not one of the plaintiffs in this lawsuit. To my knowledge, there's five individuals. I don't think any of them are RFK. And so there could be a case of the wrong people are involved in this lawsuit. And
wrong that, kid died.
Yeah. And that could be a problem. I don't know. Let me continue here. Fletcher for the government says they didn't hesitate to do it. And when they said no to the government never engaged in any sort of retaliation. Fletcher said instead, the government engaged in more speech. Ultimately, the president and the press secretary and the surgeon general took the bully pulpit. We just don't think that's coercion, meaning they went out and they gave speeches, press conferences, stuff like that. In one instance, Biden said that these social media companies were killing people by not taking these things down. He said that to a reporter.
And he said there would be a bloodbath
probably
if they didn't take it down.
He probably said bloodbath.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Benjamin Wignaga, the Solicitor General for Louisiana Attorney General, argued that the government has no right to persuade platforms to violate Americans' constitutional rights, and pressuring platforms in backrooms shielded from public view is not using the bully pulpit, that's just being a bully. Emails obtained as part of a lawsuit show the government badgered platforms behind closed doors, abused them with profanity, and ominously says that the White House is considering its options, all to get the platforms to censor more speech. Now, if they say they're considering its options, to me, you're talking about some of these things that we're going to mention about coercion. And yeah, we'll go more into this because I have a couple clips to play and all that. But
it's like, I think Bailey said something about the mob. You know, it's like you go meet with the mob boss and he has a gun on the table.
Mm-hmm.
But he never says gun, never like touches the gun, but it's just sitting there. By default, like when you're talking with the government, there's already
yeah,
a cloud, a dark, ominous cloud of like, we can do whatever we want to you.
Well, the analogy goes further than that because you were nicer about it than what actually happened. In this analogy, the person goes and meets with the mob and the guy says, if you continue doing this, I'm going to kill you. And he goes back to work. And then like a year later, he brings him back in. He says, hey, just so you know, if you continue doing this, I'm going to kill you. Okay. And then like another year goes by after that. And so a year goes by and someone from the mob brings him this list and he says, hey, wouldn't it be great if you did this? And the guy's like, yeah, I would love to do that. Of course I would. I agree. And then someone else comes along and says, there's no coercion.
Yeah. you're saying because of the 230.
They had multiple congressional hearings where the social media CEOs came up and had to testify, where mainly Democrats, but also Republicans, but Democrats are badgering them about not censoring things enough. Republicans are badgering them about censoring things too much, threatening 230. Democrats are threatening 230 and antitrust against them if they don't do what they want. Republicans are saying 230 if they don't do what they want. And then they all go back home after that. Then they all get brought back in again right after the election in 2020. Same thing happens again. Hey, wouldn't it be great if we had antitrust breaking up these big corporations? You got Elizabeth Warren posting, AOC posting, Bernie Sanders, all these people posting. Yeah, we need to use antitrust lawsuits against these companies. Yeah, Ted Cruz is one of the people who named. He said, through Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, they have a monopoly. And it's just funny because he listed out multiple companies and then said they had a
monopoly. And then said Bono. But,
yeah. Afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay. In this article, they say encouragement versus coercion. That's kind of the argument that people are making, or that they made in court yesterday. Government agencies have routinely encouraged social media companies to restrict harmful or illegal content for years, including posts involving terrorism and human trafficking. That's different because that's illegal. There are laws against those things. Okay. There are not laws against, and like imagine the ode to humanity here. Someone says, you guys know this vaccine has side effects. Ah, you can't say that. No, that's disinformation. That's misinformation.
That's the same as human trafficking.
Same as human trafficking, yeah, yes.
And terrorism.
Aguinaga argued that speech involving criminal activity is not protected, but the Biden administration began to push social media companies in 2021 to restrict misinformation about the COVID-19 vaccine. Some of it was not misinformation. It was just a little bit ahead of its time. Mm. That's really all it was. Content was also
like the lab leak theory.
Yeah, stuff like that. Content was also targeted that involved election disinformation. In 2022, the Fifth Circuit Court judge appointed by Donald Trump, because that's important to say, ruled that officials under both President Joe Biden and Trump coerced social media companies to censor content over concerns that would fuel vaccine hesitancy during the pandemic. So we got a few things here. When they're talking about, is it coercion or is it persuasion? And they're talking about these emails and they talk about how there's no explicit threats. And even in the emails, there's no implicit threats. My argument here is that these people running the social media companies, they remember previous things that have happened in their lives, yeah, previous to the email chain that they're on. That they don't just look at these email chains in a vacuum with the government. They remember, oh yeah, I had to testify in front of Congress and they were grilling me and talking about antitrust and 230 and all that. And oh yeah, a couple of years before that, I had to testify in front of Congress and they're grilling me. And oh, look at this. Here's a prominent senator saying that they should use antitrust against us because of misinformation and all that. So if, in my opinion, as a human being running a company, you remember things that happened previous to the email conversation that, you're in right now.
Because you've been abused in your head, you're thinking when they say jump, your response should be how high?
Yeah.
Not.
Not why or no.
Right.
I can't say that.
Go back to the previous, because I think what the justices said here are is pretty important.
I got a couple in video here. That's why I skipped.
Oh, but go. No, go. Go ahead.
Okay.
I want to hear the video.
Let's hear this one.
It's really audio, though.
This one was, it's audio, yeah.
Of a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. So I'm just interested in the government sort of conceding that if there was coercion, then we automatically have a First Amendment violation.
So I'm not conceding that that would be the case. I could imagine that in times of pandemic, if there were actual restrictions, maybe those would be justified. But our position here, because we think it's the position consistent with the facts, is that there wasn't any coercion to begin with.
Mr. Fletcher, on that point, you mentioned coercion repeatedly in terms of threats. Can there also be coercion, in your view, in terms of inducements?
We think there can. I think often a threat or an inducement is sort of the flip side, one or the other. I think in the next case, you could construe it either way, threat of prosecution, offer of leniency. So we acknowledge that it can be both, but it has to be a threat or an inducement of some concrete government action, not just a more government speech.
And hypothetically, and I'm not saying this happened here, but would a threat or an inducement with respect to any trust actions qualify as coercion?
Sure.
And a threat or an inducement with respect to Section 230.
Now that part's important right there because...
And who's asking that? That's Gorsuch?
Yeah, I think so. And that's not part of this case. And he's talking to the Biden
attorney.
Representative. And he asks if, with respect to antitrust, would that be coercion? And Biden's attorney says, yes, it would be coercion. But in this specific instance, no one threatened antitrust in these specific cases that they're talking about right now. So my argument is that the people running the companies, if they didn't just agree with every single thing that they censor, then and it is their right to take down those things if they wanted to take down those things on their own, independently, okay? But it's my argument that they have a memory that goes past like a week before that, and that they remember the times that they had to go to Congress and testify in front of Congress, and that they're well aware of all of the people in Congress that are talking about bringing antitrust against these people because they're too big, because they have monopolies and they need to be easier to control and all this, that they know the situation that is going on. Even if it's not specifically mentioned in these instances, that all of these things have led up to this time where they can then ask the companies to do something and they're going to do the thing because of years of threats that have happened beforehand. That's my argument, yeah. That's what's happening. And he just said that a threat of antitrust would be coercion. There have been plenty of threats of antitrust.
A lot of them.
Documented hours worth of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think that one's harder for two reasons. One is that these are executive branch officials who don't have the ability to unilaterally enact 230 reform. And I think the question
is... they have a power to influence that.
But the question is...
Would that be enough to say we're going to, if you don't do X, we are going to change our position on Section 230?
So potentially yes as to legislation. 230, if I could just get this out though, I think sure. Is different because 230 is about content moderation. It's about this very issue. And I think a government official has to be able to say, I support Section 230 reform because I'm concerned about these things. And also, in the meantime, I think platforms should be doing better.
I understand that. But in terms of advocating for change of Section 230, that could be coercion in your view.
If it were framed as a threat, our position wasn't done.
And how about saying you're killing people?
That has literally been done. If it were framed as a threat, it would be coercion.
But that hasn't been done.
It did not happen in this specific instance when they asked for this girl Jill's post to be taken down. There was someone named Jill. I can't remember her last name. It doesn't matter. Yes, that did not happen right there in that email chain. But it happened for years leading up to this time where they started asking them to take things down. And I'm honestly shocked that this was not brought up. And I don't know if that's for legal reasons it can't be brought up or what that may be that can't be brought into this case.
Being brought up now by Gorsuch.
No, I mean the fact that He's doing a hypothetical right now. He says, I'm not saying that this is what occurred in this case, but if they were to do this, you know, would this be coercion? And even the attorney for the plaintiffs in the case doesn't bring up the years and years of threats of antitrust and 230 reform in actual congressional hearings about misinformation and disinformation being allowed on social media platforms. That's what we're talking about right now. That they were continuous threats of antitrust and 230 reform directly relating to these companies allowing what they called misinformation and disinformation online. And it wasn't brought up.
And then they're saying, well, the executive branch doesn't have the power to do that. Yeah, but they have the power to influence,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, of course they do. I mean, the president and his, you know, the executive branch obviously sends things to Congress.
Yeah.
Yeah. Saying, hey, here's my budget proposal. Or, hey, here's what we should do to ban guns, mm-hmm. or whatever the case may be. Like,
all right, let's talk.
How about saying you're killing people? Could that be coercion in some circumstances? That if you don't change your moderation policies, you're responsible for killing people.
So I think that one is much harder. That's a statement that President Biden made off the cuff.
I'm not talking about the context specific issues, and I understand you have arguments there, but could that in some circumstances, an accusation by a government official that unless you change your policies, you're responsible for killing people, could that be coercion?
Now, he can't say yes in this instance because they literally have video of Joe Biden saying that they were killing people by not changing their moderation policies. Mm-hmm. And the other instances, he said, yes, that would be coercion. Because they don't have specific examples in these cases of that happening. In this one, they have a specific example of Joe Biden saying, you're killing people. And so he does not agree that that's going to be coercion.
So I find it hard to imagine a situation where that sort of public statement could be. I'll acknowledge, as you say, context matters a ton. And so I don't want to say it's impossible. All I'm saying is it didn't happen here. The president said this to the public in the middle of the pandemic. And then 3 days later, I think this is important, he clarified. He said, I'm not saying Facebook is killing people. I'm saying the people spreading misinformation are. And when he was asked, will you hold the platforms accountable? He was explicitly asked this. Will you hold them accountable if they don't do better? He said, I'm not looking to hold anyone accountable. I just want everyone to look in their mirror and imagine what would happen if this misinformation was going to their loved ones. I think it's clear that this was exhortation, not threat.
Thank you, Mr. Fletcher. How are we supposed to evaluate that?
Okay, we're gonna, you know, do a little break just for a couple minutes. Don't go anywhere at all. We're gonna talk about what we just heard from the Supreme Court and then get into the minimum wage thing with Uber and Lyft.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash instead with some handy websites. Bitrefill.com has been accepting Dash for years and has a ton of big-name retailers and brands, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Plus, many of their gift cards are available at a discount. But what about paying your bills? Spritz.finance can do that, and they can send dollars to your bank account in case you still need those for some reason. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
And we are back, Liberty at Night, with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. Just did one segment so far, so we got like five more left, a whole bunch of stuff to talk about tonight. By the way, Charlie and I have a daily podcast that we do every single day of the week when we want to, called Good Morning Liberty. You can find Good Morning Liberty on your favorite podcast app. Make sure you go leave us a rating and review. You can also get to all of our links for everything by going to BernieLies.com. Yes, BernieLies.com. Why Bernie? Well, when we made that website like 4 years ago, you know, he was the bastion of socialism, democratic socialism, tons of people following him. He's still out there, still kicking around. And so BernieLies.com, that's where you go to find this. We're talking about this Supreme Court social media case right now.
The live group is asking which one, who's the one on the Supreme Court who can read between the lines. That's Gorsuch, I believe, if I'm hearing
correctly. So earlier I said 8-1, but probably 7-2. I think it's going to be Gorsuch and Alito that are going to be on the side of the plaintiffs in this one.
So they, I mean, they talk about the case, obviously. Do you think Gorsuch can convince any of the other justices?
It's possible that you could, that you could. Now, when they, so the Fifth Court, the Fifth Circuit, I think did an injunction on the Biden administration having any contact with social media platforms, like any of those agencies. And the Supreme Court actually stayed that junction. So they said, no, that's not, you know, don't pay attention to that. But there were dissenting views on that. I think there were three. I think it was Gorsuch, Alito, and Thomas that dissented on that stay. So maybe now you're to 6-3. It just depends on whether or not you're going to get Kavanaugh and Barrett. And, you know, obviously I'm just dividing on political lines right now, whether or not that's going to happen. Okay, so that's...
I thought the Supreme Court wasn't political. Well,
maybe they are. Who knows? Maybe they are sometimes. I did pull up a video of this is from 5 years ago, of AOC questioning. And by the way, Facebook changed their policies like directly after this when it came to political advertising. Remember when we could run political ads and all of a sudden we couldn't run political ads, and it went through a period of a couple of years there where it couldn't do any? It happened right after this.
Complete lack of fact-checking on political advertisements.
Well, Congresswoman, I think lying is bad, and I think if you were to run an ad that had a lie, that would be bad. That's different from it being, in our position, the right thing to do to prevent your constituents or people in an election from seeing that you had lied.
So you won't take down lies, or you will take down lies? I think it's just a pretty simple yes or no.
Congresswoman,
I'm not talking about spin. I'm talking about actual
disinformation. Yes, in most cases, in a democracy, okay. I believe that people should be able to see for themselves what politicians that they may or may not vote for
are saying. So you won't take them down.
Judge their character for themselves.
So you won't take, you may flag that it's wrong, but you won't take it down.
Congresswoman, it depends on the context that it shows up, organic post.
One more question. In your ongoing dinner parties with far-right figures, some of who advance the conspiracy theory that white supremacy is a hoax, did you discuss so-called social media bias against conservatives, and do you believe there is a bias?
Congresswoman, so I don't remember everything that was in the in the question.
That's all right. I'll move on. Can you explain why you've named the Daily Caller, a publication well documented with ties to white supremacists, as an official fact checker for Facebook?
Congresswoman, sure. We actually don't appoint the independent fact checkers. They go through an independent organization called the Independent.
One thing to note here is how different everything is from like 5 or 6 years ago when this occurred. And you have Mark Zuckerberg responding to AOC saying, I think it's good for people to see that people are lying and to make decisions for themselves,
right?
You know, that we're not going to take that down. And she's clearly upset that they're not going to take down those things. And just, oh, how things have changed.
God, her line of questioning too is so annoying.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. One funny thing here that we'll have to get to is, I think it's Jackson. Yeah. Ketanji Brown Jackson, she had just a banger of an argument. She's actually worried that doing this could actually hamstring the government in their quest to quell speech. I'm sorry, that's basically how, like literally how it's worded, but here we go.
Justice Jackson?
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods.
Okay.
Well, exactly. Right.
We'll listen to the
rest. Yes. Exactly.
Your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways.
In the most important of times. Yeah. Yes.
Uh-huh.
That's right. That's what it's for.
She, I don't know if this clip goes into it. She brings up a hypothetical, which is a legit question, but we'll see.
I mean, what would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country, and you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information. So can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that, because you've got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective, and you're saying that the government can't interact with the source of those problems.
And Your Honor, I understand that.
So she brings out, the hypothetical's not in there, but she brings up a hypothetical, which is, let's say that there's a new trend that the kids are following. And the trend is, let's see how high of a window you can jump out of. And just increasingly, everyone's trying to find higher points.
Or Tide Pods or something.
Yeah, so it's like a Tide Pod thing or whatever. So she brings up, well, okay, so people are making statements, don't do this, it's dangerous, and it's not stopping it. So should the government, if the platforms themselves don't do this, should the government be able to go to the platforms and tell them, hey, you got to take down these posts that are encouraging kids to jump out of windows, you know, because they're dying, you know? Now I think that's a bit of a natural selection thing, but I'm a bit of a hardliner when it comes to that. Yeah. I don't know. So she brings up that it could be in the public's best interest, and the government has an interest in keeping people safe, essentially, in times of danger like that. And the problem with these hypotheticals is, like, in this case right here, we're probably both like, okay, I don't want kids to jump out of windows, you know? I don't want them to jump from increasingly higher points and see who can jump from the highest point and not die. That's ridiculous. Now, this trend would be over within a day or so, but whatever.
Yeah.
You know, because we'd find the highest point and then it would stop. You know, it's not going to happen for a long time, but whatever. Let's keep the hypothetical going. You know, you don't want that to happen. And so you could say, well, the
kid who got second place would determine the first place winner.
Yeah, he's the winner.
Yeah, he would determine the first place winner because he was the first loser.
So
we're saying he because it's probably a boy.
Probably.
Yeah.
So the problem is the slippery slope here when it comes to the government needing to keep people safe. So then you slide all the way down to, well, someone said that there are adverse health effects from these vaccines. Well, if people hear that there are adverse health effects, then they could be less likely to take the vaccine. And therefore, that could create a public harm. And so therefore, the government has to come in and restrict people from saying that. And it's in the best interest of the public as a whole. It's the government keeping people safe when they do that. Justice Kavanaugh brought up, well, what if in a time of war, people said something online that hurt the war effort? And this made it more dangerous for national security. You know? And so that's why I'm not counting Kavanaugh as one of the people who's probably going to vote in favor of the plaintiffs on this one.
I mean, didn't... Like, newspapers print all kinds of stuff during times of war.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, either for or against, by the way. What's the difference?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. So the moral of the story is this, I think, did not go the way that I thought it was going to go, or that probably any of the people listening thought it was going to go. First off, all of them had a lot of problems with even the standing in general, where people were thinking this is just going to get thrown out anyway. But I think they have to find a standing before they even take up the case, right?
No.
And they've agreed to take up the case.
Sometimes they agree to listen to oral arguments to see if you can find standing.
Okay.
That happens.
But there'd be a possibility if they don't find standing that they would announce that in like a week, right?
Possibly.
Not in 4 months when the rest of the decisions come out, you know?
It's possible.
So I'm not extremely hopeful about this one. One of the problems is that I think the right people are not involved in the lawsuit. like someone like RFK could have been involved in a lawsuit potentially, and he's trying to sell books and stuff like that, and so maybe he could prove even more harm. The New York Post, I think, should have been involved in the lawsuit. They're one of the main people who got censored, and to me, that seemed to be directly tied from conversations with the government. So those people, I think, have more standing. But then when it comes to proving the coercion, if they're not accepting the fact that the government has spent years threatening antitrust and 230 against these companies, like if they're not going to take that into consideration and you just act like that never happened and now the government's asking for these things and people are just doing them and you're like, well, I guess that means they just wanted to do them because history never happened, you know, then I don't know any of these cases that are going to work.
Well, and what is, you know, can the government ask? Can they just ask? I mean, I think that legally is fine, but you have to couple it together and say, okay, are there threats behind their ask?
I don't
like
think,
if I don't comply, are they going to encourage Congress to break my company apart?
Yeah.
Or are they going to whatever the case may be? So that's the interesting thing. But also, do we need the government to protect people in that way with speech?
No. So what I was going to say is,
so this, it's like, can't this, people decide for themselves whether or not jumping out of windows is harmful?
And actually asking people to do something that brings them immediate harm, I think, is going to be closer to being illegal than a lot of things. Like if you're encouraging people to do something that's immediately going to harm themselves, there might actually be laws against something like that.
And well, when remember it comes that, to, remember he, that girlfriend who went to jail because mm-hmm. she encouraged her boyfriend to commit suicide?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, yeah.
So in the case
in fact, of, she badgered him. Like, why haven't you done it yet?
In the case of things that are illegal, you could say, well, yeah, the government can bring up people saying things that are illegal. But in that case, Congress needs to make a law. And then that law can be enforced and the government can say, this is something illegal that's happening right now. And then I guess they have the right to do that. And to me, that kind of clears up these hypotheticals and all the stuff that they're talking about. Pass a law. And then when you're talking to them, it means that you're enforcing a law. But any other time you're talking to them, I don't support it. If it's outside of a law that has been passed by Congress, I don't support it because there's always the implied threat of coercion behind the conversation. Because can you say no? Maybe sometimes, but you know what could happen if you say no too many times. They've made it clear what could happen if you say no too many times. So I don't know. Not exactly what I was expecting from this thing. We'll see how they come down on it. Real fast, I mean like 5 minutes. I'm going to take you through this timeline. This is really more of a white pill for Charlie. But Uber and Lyft were threatening to pull out of Minneapolis because the city council voted on a new minimum wage for Uber and Lyft drivers.
Yep.
What they basically did was
pull out.
They doubled the per mile and the time payout. Okay, so they say, we're going to pull out if you guys do this. They did this. It went through. The mayor vetoed it, and then the city council overrode the veto. And so they pushed it through.
Yes, exactly.
So what happened? Uber and Lyft are ceasing operations in Minneapolis.
Bam!
I knew you'd be happy about that. So here you go, Charlie.
All right. Lyft and Uber will stop offering services in Minneapolis on May 1st after the city council overrode the mayor's veto of minimum wage for rideshare drivers. This is what people don't understand, mm-hmm. you know? You can fight for 15 or 25 or 100 all you want. What if the company can exist anymore?
I've got that question for you after this.
The city council on Thursday voted 10-3 in favor of the override, allowing rideshare drivers to be paid the local minimum wage of $15.57 an hour. Lyft said in a statement the bill was deeply flawed and that the ordinance makes its operations unsustainable. We support a minimum earning standard for drivers, but it should be done in an honest way that keeps the services affordable for riders. Uber said in a statement obtained by CNN that it's disappointed the council chose to ignore the data and kick Uber out of the Twin Cities, putting 10,000 people out of work and leaving many stranded. Quote, everyone wants to see Uber and Lyft drivers get paid more, but getting a raise doesn't do a whole lot of good if you lose your job, Frey said.
Hence the mayor.
There will be a massive impact felt by our region. The ordinance mandates rideshare drivers make at least $1.40 per mile and 51 cents per minute within Minneapolis. However, the analysis Frey referred to showed lower numbers, 89 cents per mile and 49 cents per minute, to make minimum wage. We shouldn't be afraid of data. We should be embracing it. We shouldn't be ignoring studies that come out. We should be utilizing them and creating the best possible policy, Frey told. Here's a better one. How about we just let the market decide?
Mm-hmm.
We should let people decide what they're willing to pay to hop in other people's cars and what people are willing to let strangers into their car to take them to a certain destination, how much they want to make for that.
Yeah.
But how about that idea?
Mm-hmm. That's better to me. So this is a message from Lyft right here, Charlie, and there's a response.
We're leaving Minneapolis. Despite our efforts and your support, the Minneapolis City Council passed an ordinance that would make rides on the Lyft platform unaffordable for the majority of Minneapolis residents. This drastic drop in rides means the thousands of drivers who rely on the platform for earnings will ultimately earn less, creating an unsustainable situation for our customers. As a result, starting May 1st, Lyft will be forced to stop offering rides in Minneapolis, and you will no longer be able to request rides with Lyft that start or end in the city. So,
this is someone's response, and it's going to be in Dumb Bleep of the Week. Lee Hepner says, the path to profitability for Uber and Lyft has always been about depressing wages for gig workers. If a company can't afford to pay their drivers a livable wage, maybe that company doesn't deserve to exist.
Okay.
And I'll add an amendment onto that. Those drivers don't deserve to have a job.
Yeah.
Because that's what you're actually saying.
Yep.
So now we're going to live in this person's world where it is better for those 10,000 people to have no way to earn money by using their car to drive people around.
And the hundreds of thousands of people who use Uber and Lyft to get around the city.
And that it's is better
that they walk. It might be better for some of them, honestly.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it just kind of reminds me of what happens, and we haven't used these terms, socialism. Ooh. Socialism. Mm. You know, eventually the companies leave, and I guess that's better. At least Marx was pursuing the greater good of people making more money, but of course that would have made it unaffordable for the people that were using it in that city. And now no one's going to be able to use it, and no one's going to be able to make any money except for
cab companies.
Cab companies.
They are rejoicing.
And taxi cab unions.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people that are going to be able to make money still. Yeah. And guess who's going to pay more money?
Medallion holders.
Yeah. Guess who's going to pay more money? People are going to pay more money. They're not going to have the service that they were freely using and that the drivers were freely deciding to drive for. And if they didn't like the wage that they were earning doing this, then they could leave that and go take a job somewhere where they were making a better wage. That's all they had to do. Right there. You're not making enough? Go get a job where you're making more money because evidently you have that offer.
There's a lot of massive companies that, by the way, in Minneapolis that offer really good paying jobs. Delta.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're talking about minimum wage.
Target.
You just go get a job at a fast food restaurant and you'll be apparently making more money than you would if you were driving for Lyft and Uber. That's probably not the case. I never made minimum wage when I was driving for Lyft and Uber. I made way more than minimum wage when I was driving for Lyft and Uber. And there is always a trade-off. As a Lyft and Uber driver, you get to decide when you're going to work and when you're not going to work. If you want to take a month off, take a month off. You don't got to talk to your boss about anything. Doesn't matter. You're not going to lose your job.
You just click a button on your app.
You just don't click a button on your app. That's all you do. Yeah. You just don't hit the button that says I'm at work right now. That's it. That's you taking time off.
Yeah.
If you go out there and you take a ride and you're like, you know what? There's a TV show on tonight. Now I feel like I want to watch that TV show. You hit the button and you go home. Okay. There is a trade-off. At the fast food restaurant, you have to go work whatever is put on your schedule. If you miss too much work, they can fire you, whatever. And you don't have nearly the freedom that you do sitting in your own car or listening to freaking music all day or books or whatever it is that you want to listen to. So even if you do make a little bit less, the people who were still driving, no doubt, 10,000 people at least still driving, made that decision because they had the opportunity to go work at a fast food restaurant for minimum wage or to keep driving their car around for probably still minimum wage or more, or the really crappy drivers didn't make minimum wage, whatever it is, and they made that choice. There's the actual answer right there.
That's right,
Magoo. Which one?
Yeah, they are listening to GML, clearly. Yeah,
that's true.
Thanks, Uber and Lyft, for listening to the show, letting us know that when they're trying to interfere in your business, you just leave town.
I think it's going to get overturned. I think they're going to pass a new law or something like that, because the next month with no Uber and Lyft is going to be a damn bloodbath.
That, yeah.
In there. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally, so people.
You're saying Trump's coming to Minneapolis.
Bathing in blood. Everyone is going to die. So anyway, let's go. We got to go.
All right. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it around. If you hated it, you can share too. Share it with people and be like, God, I hate these guys so much. Listen to how dumb they are. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You could at least do that.
Yeah.
Go to all the websites listed. We didn't do any of the ads that I reminded you to do.
Oh my gosh.
That I reminded you to do earlier.
Yeah, you did remind me.
So you're going to have to insert those in there.
After I record them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll do that in the middle of the episode.
Yeah.
Just for our ads.
Actually, what you guys are hearing right now, they're like, what are you talking about? I listened to those ads.
Yeah.
And they were good.
This is a joke.
And then you after you got done visiting the advertiser's website, you came back and listened to the podcast afterwards. And now we're here.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Hallelujah. Do all those things or don't. I don't really care, except for businesses leaving cities. I just hope... I hope they all leave. I just give the people what they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm all about giving people what they want. You know, Elon Musk brought up this good point too. During the pandemic, he just said, you know, people have to go make stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think that if people don't go make stuff, that stuff would just still exist. How do you think we got all this stuff?
No, there won't be any stuff.
It's like, if you make it too hard for people to make stuff, they're going to stop making stuff.
Mm-hmm. And when you make things more expensive and you just arbitrarily raise people's wages, the stuff gets more expensive and then people have a harder time paying for the stuff.
Yeah.
Also,
because they know, like Uber and Lyft, they have all this data. They know exactly what to charge to maximize the amount of rides that are happening. They know exactly what to charge. Anyway, enough of that. if you love liberty, then do what I said to do. Follow my demands.
Yeah.
And if you do.
Now, wait, are you coercing them or is that like you're trying to persuade them or what is it?
I'm not going to show up to their house or nothing. You know, with a billy club.
Okay.
Because I don't believe in billy clubs.
Yeah. You're just arguing from your bully pulpit that's what they should do.
I have a bully mic.
Okay.
And I'm putting that mic to good use.
Okay.
Do what I said or else. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That, no one knows what the else is.
Mm-mm.
Because I didn't explicitly say in this very moment the else is.
I got you.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
There's no threat.
Do it or not. And I also said don't do it.
Because gave the option.
I gave the option.
Okay, I got you.
See how that works?
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't share the show, there will be a bloodbath. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And this will be the least of the bloodbaths. Yeah. This is a small part of the bloodbath.
That'll be the least of your worries. Okay, coming up, we're going to be talking about whether or not illegal immigrants have the Second Amendment rights that American citizens do, and then we'll do Dumb Bleep of the Week.
Protection. Eleutheromania. The insatiable desire for freedom.
Filibuster.
It's the new 3-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Free Talk Live. What's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? It's another fantastic episode of Liberty Unite with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. Got a lot to talk about today. We got Dumb Bleep of the Week coming up, so a bunch of different subjects there. But first, a story that really got going last week has to do with this illegal immigrant allowed to carry guns. Judge rules.
U.S. District Judge Sharon Johnson Coleman recently ruled that an illegal immigrant previously charged for carrying a semi-automatic firearm, that's just a standard firearm, could legally carry guns under the Second Amendment. According to Epoch Times, illegal immigrants have previously been prevented from carrying guns and ammunition under 18 U.S.C. Section 922. The outlet reported that prosecutors charged this Flores.
Mm-hmm. We'll just say Flores.
Yeah, I need some help there. Mm-hmm. Heriberto.
Just say Flores.
Carbajal Flores. An illegal immigrant, this Flores person, in 2020 for carrying a semi-automatic pistol, just a pistol, by the way. Yeah,
not a revolver.
In Chicago, despite, quote, knowing he was an alien illegally and unlawfully in the United States.
I mean, I guess a revolver is that still semi-automatic? I mean, you pull the trigger and another bullet's ready to fire after that.
I don't know. Doesn't that count? I have to check my classes on that.
I don't know which. Yeah.
Anyhow. The illegal immigrant's lawyers previously attempted to have the case against Flores dismissed on two separate occasions before their third motion to dismiss the case was accepted by Coleman on March 8th. Coleman dismissed the case based on the Supreme Court's 2022 decision in New York State Rifle and Pistol Association Incorporated versus Bruin, which expanded gun rights and directed lower courts to follow historical context with regard to gun control laws. While the Department of Justice argued that the ban on illegal immigrants carrying weapons was similar to historical bans that prevented British loyalists from owning guns following the establishment of the United States, Coleman ruled that historical bans included exceptions that allowed individuals to carry weapons if they were determined to be nonviolent, according to Epoch Times. Coleman explained that since Flores has not displayed dangerous behavior, preventing him from carrying a firearm would go against historical precedent. It would also go against the Second Amendment, by the way.
And it's also interesting that this Supreme Court case, Bruin, that we're, you know, everyone on the right and libertarians were all really happy about. And one of the things that people on the left were super unhappy about was this historical precedent part of the Bruin decision, that now they're going back to historical precedent and finding that really there is no historical precedent for barring people that are illegal immigrants, of course, because that wasn't even really a thing. There's no historical precedent for barring these people from owning guns, unless you talk about British loyalists. So I went through and I did a little bit of digging. This actual code, just so you know, unlawful acts, you go down to the actual code that applies to this. It shall be unlawful for any person who, being an alien, is illegal or illegally or unlawfully in the United States or... Yeah, so an illegal alien, to ship or transport in interstate or foreign commerce or possess in or affecting commerce any firearm or ammunition, or to receive any firearm or ammunition which has been shipped or transported in the interstate or foreign commerce. First off, people are arguing on the basis of this law, are arguing on the basis of many, many laws that we do not like because they go to the freaking interstate commerce clause, which is one of the most overused, most misunderstood things in the entire Constitution that has been used to take away our rights since this was unfortunately
misinterpreted.
Yes. So I don't like anything. So what they're saying though is
they could build one and not even violate this code.
I guess so, but maybe, I mean, if you build it from scratch. Because if you order parts, I don't know if that's going to count, you know, ordering the... Well, I guess it depends on what the...
Well, that wouldn't be classified as a firearm, though.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what the ATF is deciding these days.
Yeah.
So part from this ruling, it says, in Bruin, the Supreme Court established a framework for analyzing whether a challenged firearm regulation violates the Second Amendment. First, Bruin instructs courts to determine whether the Second Amendment's plain text covers an individual's conduct, if it does, the conduct is presumptively protected, and the government bears the burden of demonstrating that the challenge regulation, quote, is consistent with the nation's historical tradition of firearm regulation. They then made the argument, by the way, that they did have laws against British loyalists having arms. I would just immediately make the argument that is different. You're literally a British loyalist to the country that we just declared independence from and fought a war against. And so this, it's not a a great comparison to begin with. But anyway, they did have that, but there were exceptions. But they would do that on an individual basis, by the way. They would determine if the former British loyalist is so untrustworthy or dangerous that they should be barred from possessing the weapon. So there's that part of the case, okay? Oh, wow, did we come up on another ad already?
Yeah, well,
did that happen?
I'm done talking about this, though.
The government argues that Flores is a non-citizen who is unlawfully present in this country. The court notes, however, that Flores has never been convicted of a felony, a violent crime, or a crime involving the use of a weapon. Even in the present case, Flores contends that he received and used the handgun solely for self-protection and protection of property during a time of documented civil unrest in the spring of 2020. I was saying this, I guess, before we started the show today, but he used this gun. The reason he got arrested was because he used this gun in defense of his property during the BLM riots and looting
in 2020,
in the spring of 2020.
The mostly peaceful, the mostly peaceful protest.
This was in June or July of 2020.
You said rioting and looting.
Yeah, sorry. The mostly peaceful protests. Yes. Those things.
By the way, you couldn't get COVID during that time.
Mm-hmm. The court finds that Flores's criminal record containing no improper use of a weapon, as well as the nonviolent circumstances of his arrest, do not support a finding that he poses a risk to public safety such that he cannot be trusted to use a weapon responsibly and should be deprived of a Second Amendment right to bear arms in self-defense. Thus, this court finds that as applied to Flores, Section 922 is unconstitutional. In my opinion, this isn't a white pill, because this court in Illinois, of all places, just found that your right to possess a firearm is inherent to your humanity, and that one of the laws in 18922 is unconstitutional because it bars your right to bear arms.
Mm-hmm.
And they just went all the way past American citizens and said, even people who aren't American citizens, that we do not have the right to tell them that they cannot possess a firearm.
Yeah, because these rights go beyond
your
condition as a citizen.
I don't know. Yeah. I know that I've seen all the stuff, and we're going to talk about the stuff. But trust me, we're going to. Let's get into some of the stuff about this. Charlie Kirk, he says, some libertarians are endorsing the recent court ruling allowing illegal immigrants to own and carry guns in the United States. You know what you call illegal immigrants carrying guns in your country? An invading army.
God.
I don't agree. I don't agree, but let's go a little bit more libertarian here, because Clint Russell.
It's not even like, it's not even like guerrilla warfare, even. Like, you could call what they did in Israel, like, that's an armed invasion. People coming in and with paragliders. And
you mean an armed invasion?
Yeah.
That's what you would call that.
Not one single,
like a group of people having guns.
Yes. Yes. Coming in and actually shooting people.
Yeah.
That would be an armed invasion. Like what happened in Israel, that's an example of an armed invasion.
You know what else is an example? Other armed invasions that have taken place in history.
Yes. Gosh.
But a group of people having the right to carry a gun, to possess a gun, does not constitute an armed invasion.
Who knew this Flores guy was an entire army?
Clint Russell from Liberty Lockdown, he says, there are millions of people flooding the border, and I'm seeing a lot of you cheer on the fact that they can be legally armed. An armed migration is an invasion. Historically, it would be perceived as the start of a war. I'm honestly at a loss as to how anyone would support this.
Still lost.
This is why we'll never just go fully viral, because you just have to say the dumbest things.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only way that you can do it.
You have to pander to people's emotions.
Yeah, that's it. He continues. He does like a quote retweet here. Go ahead, Charlie.
He says, let's walk through, with a U, T-H-R-U, let's walk through the dangers here. 20,000 Chinese migrants have entered in January, according to CPB. He's doing a hypothetical here. Mm-hmm. Say 5,000 of them are CCP backed. That's 60,000 a year. In a decade, you could have 600,000 CCP soldiers trained and armed and living all throughout America. Likely no, possible yes.
He says in his own tweet that it's not likely.
Right.
But then goes on.
The U.S. troop count is under 3 million. Many are deployed. An inside-out strategy is exactly what I'd draw up if an antagonist nation like the U.S. was constantly saber-rattling against me. The libertarian answer to this is gun ownership is a natural right, and that's all you have to say about it. Now, is it possible that the Chinese Communist Party is trying to get people in here illegally and are staging some kind of takeover? Yeah, that's possible.
Sure, it's
so possible. I don't think individuals should lose their rights because that's a possibility.
Mm-mm.
It's absolutely crazy. Is it possible that schools could be shot up?
It's possible, yeah.
Yeah. So should we just take away guns?
It's possible that the more you allow people to own guns, there's a higher likelihood that people could kill people with guns, you know? So maybe we should do something about that to keep people safe.
Is an armed invasion only aggression when they are wearing camo? I don't think so, because
Costco said America shouldn't train any pilots because of 9/11.
Yeah, you're right. We should get rid
planes.
Of pain.
We're all worried about Boeing. We should be worried about planes in general.
Do they have to be firing as they cross the Rio Grande? Are you thinking this through at all? What constitutes an invasion? If 3 million people entering your country illegally per year while armed does not constitute an invasion, an act of aggression, then I'm lost as to what it should be called.
Someone having a gun does not constitute an act of aggression. An act of aggression constitutes an act of aggression. Whatever happened to, you know, one of the most important principles we have in this country is innocent until proven guilty. And that's not just for Americans. That's supposed to be the way that we view human beings. No victim, no crime, innocent until proven guilty. That until you have actually done something to violate the liberties and the rights of other people, we don't just look at you and assume that you're a danger to society.
Mm. And just because the immigration policies of America are broken, you're incentivized to come here illegally. And so by default, therefore, they should lose their rights as a human. They should lose their individual humanity because potentially there might be bad actors. He said, there is no point at which you'd see fit to defend your community. I'm not even asking this to start a fight. I'm just trying to get people to really consider this more deeply. As far as I'm concerned, everyone has a God-given right to defend themselves. We should just stop there then.
Yeah.
I do not believe that everyone on earth has a God-given right to live in America. I definitely do not believe that everyone on earth has a right to enter America while armed. Just being honest.
So what he just said there is that his problem is with the immigration system, except for that he makes all these arguments about how it's scary for people to have guns. And he's essentially making the same arguments that people on the left make about people that are on the right who want to be in militias. The problem is if you go along with this line of thinking, then what you eventually say is against the arguments that we make all of the time. Because we make the argument all the time that your rights come from your humanity. Some people say from God. It doesn't actually, it says endowed by your creator. Your creator could be science or the Big Bang or God or whatever, just your creator, whatever that is. You're born with those rights. They don't come from the government. And making this, Clint's argument is that the government does have the right to take away this right that supposedly was not given by the government in the first place. It essentially flips it into a government-granted right. And that is an extremely slippery slope. I think that this is a great decision. We constantly make arguments like this, that you're born with inalienable rights. They do not come from government. We say the gun laws are unconstitutional. I guarantee you could search Clint's page right now, and he's probably said the gun laws are unconstitutional.
Or close to it.
Someone should probably do that. We say gun laws don't prevent violent criminals from getting guns.
Because they don't.
Yeah, so what's your argument? Oh, we're going to pass this law, or we're going to make sure the illegal immigrants don't have guns, and then they're not going to have guns? Since when is that an argument?
Yeah.
I thought we said that doesn't work. So what are we doing here? The government can prevent people that are violent from having guns? Since when? What are you talking about, man? Mm. Like I talked about earlier, the innocent until proven guilty, the fact that a person has a gun does not make them a threat to you. They They have to be a threat to you first.
Yeah.
You can't just look at someone and because they're not from this side of the line, they're dangerous to you automatically. What if all the people coming from China are fleeing China because China sucks?
Because yeah,
they want to live in the free country, kind of.
Maybe their social credit score's low.
You know, I'm not going to assume that the CCP is sending that many people here to somehow overthrow a government. I'm sure some of them are. Not saying that's not a thing that's happening. But they're innocent until proven guilty. I'm not going to make an assumption because of the way someone's face looks.
Yeah.
I'm just not
going
to.
Should we set up prison camps?
I guess so.
To house the Chinese?
Like I said earlier, no victim, no crime. Like, where is the crime here? And then the most important thing that I believe, because all of these people that are Republicans and even some of the libertarians that are talking about this, what they are all actually saying is that they don't like our immigration enforcement. Because removing this situation, you take away the illegal immigrant, they would say that your rights come from God, that the government's not going to prevent criminals from criming, and that gun laws are unconstitutional. They would all say that. What this is actually on the back of, the root cause of this problem, is that they don't like our immigration system, and they don't like our immigration enforcement system. I'm genuinely confused how an illegal immigrant can actually take something this high up in the court system. I think he went to jail or something for it, whatever. I think they said he could be released, and he gets released. And I'm like, I'm not saying that he should be deported or whatever. What I'm saying is I'm genuinely confused about what the rules are on this. Like, you just come out there and say, I'm an illegal immigrant and I have these rights. I was told that the government would say, would you say you're an illegal immigrant? Why don't you come with me right now and we're going to, you know, take care of that problem because that's a felony. You know, that's what I thought. What I think all of these people's arguments boils down to is they don't like the immigration system or the immigration enforcement system. And that's what people should actually be talking about. And then this is different, by the way, from welfare. Welfare is using money that was stolen from people and giving it to other people. So when we talk about illegal immigrants getting welfare or these prepaid cards or whatever these housing services are and stuff like that, that's a little different because someone else's liberty was violated in the process of giving that thing to that person. And so it opens up a little bit more of a door to talk about it. But a human being having a gun that has not done anything violent to anyone and has only used it to defend themselves has not removed any liberties from any other people.
Exactly.
All we have to talk about here is the immigration system and if there's anything that should be done about that. And outside of this, we are making extremely dangerous arguments about the fact that our rights to own a gun, our right to possess arms, does not come from the fact that we're humans, which is the argument that we always make. You cannot make both of these arguments at the same time.
Mm-mm.
They're completely opposing ideas.
Amen.
That's my rant on the matter.
I couldn't have said it better myself, so I'm not going to.
Well, let's go then.
Yeah. What, you had something else from Austin Peterson?
Oh, he was basically agreeing with us, or I guess we're agreeing with him right now.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
He says, the point of the whole illegal migrants can own guns is that the Second Amendment is so absolute that the natural right, which does not emanate from government, cannot be abrogated without due process from anyone. And with freedom comes the fact that means bad people can access guns and good people can access guns. The problem isn't the guns, it's the people. Simple. Agreed.
Yeah, I agree with Austin on this.
Yeah.
So good job, Austin.
It's a natural right. It's a natural right to be able to protect yourself.
Yeah.
It's a completely natural right. It doesn't come from government. It doesn't come from the Constitution. The Bill of Rights is there to restrict government from taking away natural rights.
Yes.
They're what they thought the government would try to come and take, because historically governments have done this for thousands of years. They've tried to quell speech. They've tried to take away people's right to defend themselves.
They try to force you to quarter soldiers.
They try to force you to house soldiers. You know? Thank you for the care of His Majesty's soldiers. You know, they have cruel and unusual punishments.
Buy the house and bonds.
Sir, what of the rebel wounded?
Okay, anyway, sorry, we killed just them. Moved into the Patriot.
All right.
Just then.
Anyway, Historically, governments have tried to violate people's natural rights for thousands of years, and that's what the Bill of Rights was all about. They were saying, hey, what are the most egregious ways that governments try to steal rights away from people? Oh, here's 10 of them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's at least list these so we know for sure, explicitly, hopefully, governments will not be able to restrict people's rights. Now, of course, they found ways around that. And you have what appear to be libertarians, people who are supposed to be the most principled folks on individual rights and freedoms. The idea of self-ownership, this that everything stems from, you know, I own myself. I have natural rights because I'm a human being, and no one gets to take them away from me unless I've caused harm to someone else. That's been proven.
They still let fear cloud that, just like other people do on the left. Those ideas are clouded and overshadowed by fear
and you
of
know
other
what?
People.
We have the right to defend ourselves. We have the right to bear arms in case the government gets too tyrannical, but also in case there's an armed invasion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so let them come.
Do it.
I don't think it'll last.
Mm-hmm. The more the merrier.
I think that, I mean, of course, there might be a bloodbath, but but I don't think America would lose. I feel very confident in the fact that I know a lot of gun owners who would take up arms to defend the country
mm-hmm.
if it was being invaded. A lot of them. And that's just in my circle.
I still think that the biggest threat to your liberty comes from Washington, D.C. and the people that are in the government right now. Not even, and I'm not saying that we don't have an immigration problem. I think we do. And I think something needs to be done about it. But not even the people that are coming across the border. Those people are not threatening your liberty right now. It's the people that are in office. The people that are in office in Washington, in your state, and if you're in the state of Washington. Those are the people that are actually threatening your liberty, and that's where all of this needs to be directed. Coming up, we're going to start Dumb Bleep of the Week. Dumb Bleep of the Week gets a full 3 segments this time because we got so much dumb stuff to talk about. And in a live group, we'll vote on who said the dumbest thing in politics over the last week.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project, and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.
What's up, liberty-loving friends? We're back. It's another fantastic episode of Liberty and Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. Got to remind y'all one more time, Charlie and I, actually it could be several more times that I remind you of this, but Charlie and I do a daily show every single day of the week when we want to, called Good Morning Liberty. You can go and find Good Morning Liberty on your favorite podcast app or by typing BernieLies.com into your browser. That'll bring up all of our links. We got t-shirts, they don't just say Good Morning Liberty. We got the God Hates Fed shirts, Power Corrupts shirts. We got Javier Milei shirts, got a nice Ron Paul shirt. We got stickers, we got mugs. We got all kinds of cool stuff like that. And of course, you can watch live and hang out with us at joingml.com. But before we get into Dumb Bleep of the Week, two of our very special friends, listeners, fellow Fed haters, Dan and Bailey. It's their, not Dan Bailey, the kicker.
Yeah.
Dan and Bailey, not giving you their last name, but it's their wedding anniversary, 5 years. Congrats.
Congratulations.
Congrats.
Those are the kinds of things you can find out being part of the Fat Haters Club.
And I don't want to, you know.
And you can learn about how fat I am.
I don't want to pat ourselves on the back too hard, but they just went through this real long explanation of how it was Charlie and I and Good Morning Liberty that kept them together through this time, you know.
And the Fat Haters Club.
The Fat Haters Club.
Yeah. So if you need marriage advice, this is where to go. If you want to keep your marriage together.
They're telling us more about it right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of personal. I'm not going to say that out loud, okay, but, you know. Yeah, just go to the Fat Haters Club so you can see.
They're in the chat right now.
So you can see whether or not I'm telling the truth.
Yeah.
You know, hey, we don't allow those kind of photos. Okay? No. We're taking that down. Anyhow, join the Fat Haters Club. Join gml.com. Anyway, let's do Dumb Bleep of the Week.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the dumbest things on the internet. Even though Good Morning is a place where we talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of meaning every single day of the week, when we want to, and yesterday was a day that we did not want to.
There
was other things happening around the country that needed Nate and I's attention.
Yes.
You know, so much so that we could not prepare an episode.
We needed a full day of focus.
Yes.
And mainly the night before, I was putting together some furniture and moving my TV because the new furniture is taller and stuff like that. Way more important than doing show notes.
Exactly.
That night. So just
see, Nate's so privileged currently that's what he spends his time doing.
Yeah.
Putting
together my own furniture.
Yeah, exactly.
Ordering furniture from Amazon that has to be put together with a bunch of stuff.
Exactly.
Anyhow, Dumb Bleep number one goes to Congress and the American people in general for allowing this to continue. Congressional leaders roll out the final $1.2 trillion funding package ahead of Saturday shutdown deadline.
Surprise, surprise.
When are we going to get a good old-fashioned government shutdown? They just never let it happen these days. Come on, man. Yeah. Top lawmakers are hoping to quickly clear the measure for President Biden's signature to fund the Pentagon and key non-defense agencies through September.
Of course.
$1.2 trillion through September. Now, one thing I'll point out here. Let's go. Rand Paul said, remind me why. Even though the GOP has a majority in the House and filibuster-proof minority in the Senate, the power of the purse sits idly by, unused, and the debt continues to pile higher and higher. That is a great question, Senator Paul. At this point, what's the difference? Who cares and who's in charge of Congress these days? You know, it just doesn't matter.
They all want to spend your money.
The biggest thing here is maybe they spent less than what Democrats would have spent if they were in complete and total control. You know, maybe that's the case. There's still no spending cuts. The number that we spend every year needs to go down. That's the main point of what I wanted to say right now.
Yeah.
Not up, it needs to go down.
Yeah.
Okay, and that just doesn't seem to happen.
Our house is out of order.
Yes. We're spending too much money.
Yes.
All right, we're still going out and having nice steak and seafood dinners every night, and we don't have any money. We're putting it on someone else's credit card.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's not the right thing to do. Thomas Massie said, as part of the debt limit deal last summer, Biden agreed to an automatic 1% cut to all discretionary spending if we were still on a CR, continuing resolution, on April 30th, 2024. Tomorrow, our speaker will give up that leverage and pass an omnibus that spends more than Pelosi spent in her highest year. So they've been doing these CRs every time we talk about how, well, we're about to have a shutdown, and they go and they do a continuing resolution that funds us for like another month or something. And that's because they were supposed to do these separate spending bills. It was in one of the other laws they passed, or omnibus they passed. It was something that Thomas Massie argued to get in there. And if they kept doing CRs and they didn't actually get the real spending bills passed through Congress, then on April 30th of this year, it was going to be a 1% cut across the board. And that's not even baseline budgeting 1% cut. It was an actual 1% cut to the amount of money that we're currently spending, not 1% off of what we're projected to spend. So there would have been a real cut. And all they had to do was, instead of deciding to do a crazy $1.2 trillion omnibus on Friday, March 22nd, they could have done another CR, let it go to April 30th, and they would have been forced into doing a tiny, measly 1% cut across the board, just on discretionary spending.
GOP candidates run their campaigns on.
Yes.
And then when it comes time for the rooster to chicken squat.
To chicken, yeah.
When that happens.
Squatters, we're talking about squatting later, but yeah.
Well, that's why that brought that up.
Yeah.
When it comes time for the squatters to roost,
mm-hmm.
it the dog doesn't hunt or float.
Massey also says FBI spending goes up significantly in the two-part omnibus that we won't have time to fully read. It's a over 1,000-page omnibus that I think came out early yesterday morning, something like that, and they're going to sign it today.
Here's the thing now, Thomas, come on. You're one of the smartest guys in there. You can use AI now.
I don't know if we have that Grok capability yet that Elon Musk is talking about.
Feed the AI the bill and let it summarize it for you.
I wonder, can it read this? Side note, can it read PDFs? Because those are basically photos of papers. So like, can it read a PDF?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. All right. This demonstrates that the majority of Congress isn't serious
PDFs
about holding
really photos.
I know. But it's just, so like I try to take these bills and I try to copy the whole thing and put it into a Word document so I can select parts to put screenshots of, and like you can't just copy and paste
just
a PDF.
Convert it.
You
know? It's really easy to convert it.
I don't even know what that is.
I'll show you after the show.
I don't even know what that is. So you're saying they could convert it into
it? You can convert it, okay, yes.
Into like RTF or something? Or
But computers don't need to convert it. They can still read the text
okay.
of the PDF.
Okay, well, add that on the dumb bleep of the week, man.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Including money for a new
FBI
building.
It's okay to be ignorant about stuff. You know?
That's fine. I'll wear it.
I'm ignorant about things that you know about, mm-hmm. you know? I call and ask you stupid questions all the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
Every day, stupid questions. Mike Lee says, what the hell does LGBT senior housing have to do with the role of the federal government, so much so that Congress is shelling out $850,000 for it? That's right, inside of this super important bill. They have LGBTQ senior housing services in the $1.2 trillion bill. Let's see. For services for older adults, and I guess LGBTQ specifically, it's just part of this general number one omnibus dumbness. I started off by saying that it's Congress and it's the American people's fault. And the reason I put a lot of blame on the American people is that millions of American people come together to vote for these people that are in office that are voting on these things. Okay. And the question is, why would they do anything different from what they're doing right now? They don't have to. Expecting it to change without there ever being repercussions for these people, it's just not going to happen. Now, there'd be repercussions if they decided they were going to cut Social Security or Medicare or something like that. Or but just general spending too much money all the time and to keep the government going, keep it from going into a shutdown. No one's going to remember that come November. No one cares about that. Not enough to not vote for someone or vote for someone because of it. And so, yeah, sure, it's Congress's fault, but who puts them in power? And why do they do the things they do? Because you tell them to. That's mm-hmm. why. Yeah. Not us. Not you probably listening to the show right now, but some of your friends do.
Well, and they get their minions to go out and support them. Look at all this. I mean, Liberty Resources Incorporated in Pennsylvania is going to get $1.5 million.
Oh, it says Liberty, though, so it's probably good.
Yeah.
You know?
Lyon County Human Services in Nevada is going to get almost $500,000. So these little organizations get federal grant money, and what they do is they go out and help campaign for the vote because obviously they're incentivized to do so.
Yeah. Yeah, of course they are. Okay, that's number one. How about number two? This is from a story in the New York Times called "It Turns Out the Deep State is Actually Kind of Awesome."
This is so great.
So what? This is a 6-minute video. We'll watch some of it. I'll skip around some. Basically, they're going to point out that Donald Trump campaigns a lot talking about destroying the deep state. And so they do a video to show you just how great the deep state is and how great these people are that Donald Trump wants to get rid of. And of course, they go directly to the FBI and the CIA and DHS and other agencies that we don't even know exist.
And that's they don't even have acronyms.
Yeah. And that's who they talk to. No, they talk to NASA. Okay. Anyway, there's a video here. Yeah, the EPA too.
Thanks, New York Times.
Here's some of it. Thank you, New York Times, for this content.
I will totally obliterate the deep state. I will fire.
Donald Trump is obsessed with the deep state.
The deep state, deep state, the deep state is destroying our nation.
Either the deep state destroys America or we destroy the deep state.
And many Republicans are widening his paranoia.
These unelected bureaucrats ruining this country.
From a cabal of security agents to
the sick political class that hates our country.
If elected, Trump's vowed to gut the federal government.
Reinstate the Schedule F executive order and, quote, fire rogue bureaucrats.
But who are these bureaucrats and what makes them so dangerous?
Okay, I have to say first off, before we even go into this, they're pointing out Trump a lot. You know what would have been great? You know what would have been great?
If Trump did this the first time around?
Yes, yeah, thank you. Thank you. If he hadn't already been the president before.
And could have fired a bunch of people.
Yeah. Wouldn't that have been something?
Which he's good at firing people. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a whole TV show about it.
He's famous for it.
Yeah.
Anyhow, let's keep going.
Needed answers, so we took a trip across America.
In 100 yards, take the exit.
In search of the people behind this threatening entity.
Look at it.
First stop, Huntsville, Alabama. Sure looks like some nefarious government activity happens around here.
You have reached your destination.
Meet Scott Bellamy.
I am a mission manager in the Planetary Missions Program Office.
He drives a Nissan Titan 4x4. He's loved Star Trek since he was a kid.
Of course I have a favorite character. It's either Captain Kirk or Mr. Spock.
And he may have literally saved the planet from annihilation.
Potentially.
You see, Scott managed a mission called
the Double Asteroid Redirect.
So, first off, great example. When Trump talks about getting rid of the deep state, he's definitely talking about someone
like Scott
that works in Huntsville, Alabama for NASA that it was helping them develop a program to knock an asteroid off its course. Like, that's the threat to America right there that Trump is talking about.
Yeah.
Actually. So that's the first person they should go talk to prove to everyone that the deep state actually isn't all that bad.
Not the FBI.
No, not the NSA. CIA. Not the CIA. No, not those people. So we go to Scott. He likes Star Trek and stuff like that. And so how could you be mad about the deep state? Now here's this person that works for the EPA. Okay, we're getting closer to the deep state. So what does this terrible EPA officer do? Try to keep people from dying of lead poisoning.
Clearly
this
not working
is
in Rodica Flint.
Fox.
I am the assistant administrator for water at the Environmental Protection Agency.
She loves Pilates, making salads, and watching the Taylor Swift Eras Tour on TV with her family.
Yeah. That's the deep state.
Oh, and she led an operation to make our drinking water lead-free in 10 years.
That's the dream.
Worried and angry about lead contamination, residents of Newark, New Jersey are demanding bottled water and answers.
Lead is a neurotoxin that can cause irreversible brain damage. Folks are drinking out of these pipes right now.
Every single American child will soon be able to turn on that faucet and their moms and dads know that the water they're drinking is clean.
When President Biden announced a nationwide plan to remove lead water pipes, Radhika's team made it happen.
Yep, that's right.
Water utilities would be legally required to replace all remaining lead pipes.
9 million in 10 years or less.
It's an expensive bet.
$50 billion. But those benefits are truly priceless because it's the well-being of this nation that's at stake.
You want to replace your own water pipes?
That's what Trump wants to destroy right there.
Yeah. If Trump gets elected, he's going to destroy the deep state, which means he's going to go directly after people that are trying to replace lead pipes. And if he gets elected, you'll have to replace your own water pipes.
Yeah.
Okay. Which you wouldn't be legally allowed to do anyway. But I mean, yeah, that's what's going to happen. What was the last one? I can't remember. Oh, this is someone who's trying to stop kids from working or something like that. I can't remember what it was. This has to do with the Department of Labor. Department of Labor, yeah. So anyhow, we don't have to watch this whole thing, but and this piece, which starts off with Trump's criticisms of the deep state, they decide to say, actually, the deep state is awesome. And then they just go to some randos working at non-deep state offices, in my opinion. The deep state is so deep that this guy has no clue what the deep state is. Mm, yeah. Those are the people that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Instead, he just goes to random employee
Maybe Trump
number.
Should campaign against the deeper state.
Yes. Yeah. The deepest state that there is. Deeper than that.
The abyss state.
So now he's talking about people in the NSA, the FBI, the CIA, DHS, those people, and people that we don't even know about. I think there was a Ron Paul video going around just a little bit ago where he basically said that the country has been run by the deep state or the bureaucrats since JFK was assassinated. That's where essentially they said, hey, don't cross us. This is what happens. And yeah. Since then, they've been picking all the people. Maybe it wasn't the Ron Paul video specifically. Someone else was making that point. I heard that point. So anyhow, the ATF. Yeah, thank you.
The people who spied on a presidential campaign, yeah. By the way.
But instead, they decide to go to the Department of Labor, NASA, and the EPA's person who's trying to get rid of the lead pipes in the U.S. and say, the deep state's awesome. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You want to get rid of these people?
Yep.
Anyhow.
By the way, I mean, I understand what they're doing. They're tugging on your emotional heartstrings there.
Well, yeah. And like, they're but they're also misrepresenting what the deep state
of
is.
Of course. Yeah.
So anyhow. Oh, by the way, all the people in that video should be fired. Let's go on to dumb bleep number three real quick. We don't have to spend any time on this one at all. If you want to listen to an entire episode where we talk about dumb bleep number three, you can listen to Monday's episode where we talked about the bloodbath controversy.
Honestly, they could take the 1,200 episode challenge.
They could. Yeah. They could. Mm-hmm. Wednesday was episode 1,200.
Get that done by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Technically, it was like episode 1230 or something like that, but whatever, 1,200 is as far as we're numbering them. Trump says country faces bloodbath if Biden wins in November. He was talking about the automobile industry and the economy as a whole, but of course, this was turned into some violent threat for what would happen if he lost the election, and it's completely ridiculous. It's even been refuted by a lot of people on the left now as the week goes on. But then there's also a lot of people that are still doing this thing. And they, like, I heard clips of people saying, well, I'm not surprised. I mean, this is a guy who called neo-Nazis very fine people, you know, so of course he threatened the bloodbath. And I love it when they use two fake things as an example at the same time. It's great. Anyhow, the bloodbath controversy, seriously, we're not going to spend any time on it. That's dumb bleep number three. You know the thing.
I'm not even going to say anything.
You don't have anything to say on this. No. Number four, we have another video. This guy, Adam Mockler, says, I changed the Trump supporters' mind on Ukraine. Okay, well, that's fine. Whatever you want to do. Let's listen to how we changed this Trump supporters' mind on Ukraine. I'm not saying this is your average Trump supporter, but it's definitely the median. So let's hear how this person's mind was changed.
What do you think about the funding of Ukraine?
No, I don't think that should happen.
Why not?
Because we need to take care of America first.
I'd make the argument that funding Ukraine is exactly how we put America first, because a lot of people think we're sending cash backs, but we're sending old military equipment, right? And after we send that military equipment, we get to create new American jobs to restock and repile that.
That's a good point.
On top of that, do you think Vladimir Putin's our enemy?
Not really.
Really? Why not?
Because I think he's trying to run his own country. And he's not, I don't think he is a threat to America.
It's okay that he's running his own country, but the problem is when he starts to invade other countries next to him. So we should protect our allies, essentially, right?
I agree. So that's like us trying to invade Canada.
And that wouldn't be okay.
Right.
So to piece my argument together, we're creating new American jobs, and in the process, we get to protect an ally, a sovereign country, Ukraine, from, I think Vladimir Putin is a dictator. He's a threat. He's not a good guy. So I think we're protecting America's interests. I think this is exactly how we put America first, right? Can you see that point of view?
That is a very good point. That's a good point. You've educated me a lot. I appreciate that.
Awesome. And we're both coming from the same point of view of putting America first.
Right.
How can we put America first on the...
Yep.
Please, God, don't make this be the majority of Trump supporters. Please don't let this be what they're all like. That was... If you can just give someone the dumbest argument in the world, okay, let's talk about the argument real quick. We're not sending them cash bags. We are sending a lot of, not cash, but we are sending a lot of direct money over there. But we'll wipe that from the record right now and talk about the weapons.
Let's talk about the military equipment.
So we send the old military equipment over there, and he's arguing that this does put America first, because then we get to create jobs by building new military equipment so we can restock what we sent to someone else. So Charlie, my new plan for America is, why don't we just send everyone all of our weapons? Let's just get rid of all. In fact, why don't
all
we
of
send,
our allies?
Why don't we send everything in America to everywhere else in the world? I want everything in America rounded up right now, this afternoon, and I want it put on ships that we're going to send over, and they can keep the ships too afterwards. And then we're going to create so many jobs, even more jobs than this idiot wants to create by replacing those weapons. Think of how many more jobs we'll create by rebuilding every single thing that's currently in. Why don't we burn down every house in America right now, Charlie?
Yeah.
Do you know how many jobs would be created if we had to rebuild every single house that's in America?
Yeah.
So many jobs.
Yeah. And all of them.
That's the argument, folks.
Tear down every skyscraper. Start with Trump Towers.
Yeah, take them down.
Yeah, that way Trump can rebuild them. How many jobs will that create?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just even building it. You got to buy new materials, okay? And think about those jobs for the people getting the materials, okay?
Man. Well, first, we should blow up every single mine shaft.
Oh, yeah, because you don't want...
they can rebuild the mine shafts.
You need people to redig those mine shafts. Because think about those
jobs.
Now,
it might take a while because we're going to give away all the equipment.
Well, yeah, but you want to... But think about when you rebuild that equipment. You know? Yeah. It's going to be a lot of jobs.
But we need the materials. We need the materials. We got to... Yeah.
Okay. This is the most
broken window fallacy.
This is the broken window fallacy. It is the most perfect example of the broken window fallacy. The money that we're going to spend to make new weapons could have been spent somewhere else on more productive uses. Okay. And not even by the government. It could have been kept by the people that it was taken from forcefully. And then they could have used it on more productive uses in the economy for things that we actually need right now, not blowing up things that we have in a warehouse. And then having to pay people to replace them with their own money. By the way, you're going to pay people with their money. So yeah, it's literally the broken window fallacy. And that guy just fell for it. Hook, line, and sinker. We're going to finish talking about this because we're not actually done with this dumb bleep. You know the thing. You know, every once in a while you come up on that hard stop where you got to pay the bills. And that's where we are right now. Remember, you can find Good Morning Liberty on your favorite podcast app, and you can get us giving you episodes every single day of the week. But on Tuesday nights, we are Liberty at Night on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. We'll be right back.
Free Talk Live.
What's up, all of our liberty-loving friends? It's another fantastic episode of Liberty at Night with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network. Coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. And we got to tell you that Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. With fees of less than a penny per transaction, Dash is made for spending. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol and a multi-crypto wallets. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash, and you can learn more at dash.org. That's dash.org. And I also got to tell you know, I've been telling you about how I messed up with my savings account where I put a bunch of money in it. And then a few years goes by, a pandemic, stuff like that. And I look back at it and guess what? It still says the same thing. Only now we've had a bunch of inflation. You know, technically my savings account has lost almost 20% of its value. That's because the government punishes you for keeping your wealth in cash or in a savings account through inflation, which is a tax on savers. It's the systematic erosion of your wealth. And you know that items that cost a dollar today could cost $1.50 tomorrow. You know how that stuff has been working out. But there is a solution, I believe, for this, and that's gold. because gold can be a hedge against inflation. Gold remains steady when inflation's on the rise. And if you want to find out more, you can go to noblegoldinvestments.com/GML. That's noblegoldinvestments.com/GML.
Who wrote that book again? It's Economics in One Lesson.
That's not Hayek. That's not Economics in One Lesson. He's telling the story from...
It's in that book.
He starts off, he talks about it early on. Hazlitt does Economics in One Lesson, but I think he's talking about the broken window fallacy in the book. Is it Hayek that did that? Or, I don't know. We're showing how uneducated libertarians we are. Other people talk about... Oh, is it Frederic Bastiat?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In the 1850 essay, That Which Is Seen and That Which Is Not Seen, to illustrate why destruction and the money spent to recover from destruction is not actually a net benefit to society. It seeks to show how opportunity costs, as well as the law of unintended consequences, affect economic activity in ways that are unseen or ignored. And this is why it's such a hard sell, because a lot of it is unseen, mm-hmm. right?
Well, because there are things that don't get done with that money. You don't know exactly what they are, but there are things that we won't have because that money was taken to replace something that was just literally blown up somewhere. And I mean, if this were the argument, you would argue for, you know, wouldn't it be great if a hurricane came across the country and just destroyed everything? We talk about how that's a bad thing for the economy and how much it costs. Why do we care about it? We want it to cost as much as possible. Those are jobs that we're creating.
I pray for Katrina or more powerful storms than Katrina to hit the coast.
But without people dying.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We got to employ the doctors and nurses.
That's true. How do you keep the medical industry in? You want jobs in the medical industry?
Yeah.
Speaking of the medical industry, by the way, we're going to move on to number five, which is kind of...
You see what I did there?
Yeah, it's kind of a dumb bleep, but not fully, because someone lied about the next one, and this was going to be the kicker that really fully made it a dumb bleep. I want to point out that there was this big Don Lemon interview between, you know, Don Lemon's first and only X episode that he did, I believe, was with Elon Musk, and it went terribly. He approached it like a tabloid journalist. I think a lot of people thought
Elon Musk canceled his show on X.
Well, and that's a lot of it had to do with his ridiculous ass that
actually,
he had.
He didn't cancel his show. He just said that he's not going to promote it, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not.
Well, there was a contract he was wanting, and they're not going to do that.
Yeah, the contract was canceled.
He can clearly post his show on X.
Yes.
He's just not going to be like an official X. You know, doesn't Tucker have a deal with X or something like that?
I think so. Yeah.
Anyhow, the reason that it's not the dumb bleep I thought it was, but I already had it put together, is because there was this post that says Don Lemon implies that Elon Musk was uncomfortable during their interview because Lemon is gay and black. If you watch the video, that's not what he said at all. Actually, he starts off by saying that he never thought about that. He says, well, some people have said this, and he asked the guest that's on there, do you think that this is what it was? And that person says, no, I don't think that's what it was. And then that's it. That's all that's in that clip. Yeah. Okay, so don't always just read the caption for something and think that that's what's actually in the clip. It can get kind of dangerous. This one is kind of funny, where they're talking about how lowering standards for doctors when you're using DEI, basically non-merit-based hiring in the medical field, would be a bad thing. And Don Lemon just seems to not, he doesn't, I wouldn't say he gets it. I don't think he understands the argument. We can play a little bit of it. Here we go.
I believe that if we lower the standards for what it takes to become a doctor.
You're saying if we lower the standards, yes. But do you believe people are dying because the standards are being lowered?
I don't
or have
think that
lowered.
Is, yes, an issue, but it could become an issue.
Okay. But the actual evidence in history shows the exact opposite. If you look at how minorities are treated by the medical system, most doctors now are white. And
female.
There are lots of mistakes in medicine. So you're saying that white doctors have bad medical care? I'm trying to understand your logic here when it comes to DEI, because there's no actual evidence of what you're saying.
No, I said, so if the standards, like let's say, I think that particular thing was referring to surgeons. Let's say a surgeon is asked to a surgeon in training is asked to do a series of operations under the supervision of a senior surgeon, and they get a bunch of those operations wrong. If that happens, and yet they are still approved to be a surgeon, the probability that someone will die, I think, at some point is high.
Okay, I understand that, but that's a hypothetical. That doesn't mean it's happening.
I didn't say it's happening.
Okay, it's a very awkward exchange where he says, if we do this, this would be bad. And Don Lemon's argument is, well, that's not happening. And he's like, yeah, I said, if we do this, this would be bad.
If we lower standards.
Yeah. And he's like, well, that's not what's happening right now. It's like, yeah, I know. I said, if we do it, it would be bad. And then he starts off with the thing saying, well, a lot of people die, from medical mistakes right now. And a lot of the doctors are white, or most of them are white. So your argument just doesn't have any merit. You're not actually talking about the race of the doc. The argument when you say you shouldn't have DEI in hiring for surgeons, the argument is not that black surgeons would be bad. That's not what the argument is. The argument is you should not move away one bit from merit-based hiring for surgeons or any other kind of medical professionals.
It'd be like the military lowering standards to allow females on the front lines.
Yeah, or the Metro Nashville Police decreasing their standards, taking away some of their physical tests so they can hire more women, which was going to be in but ran out of space. So anyhow, that was one of them.
Well, anytime you lower standards to, you shouldn't be hiring people based on the color of their skin anyway.
Mm-mm.
You know, it should all be merit based. You know, are you the best person for the job?
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what you look like.
And so the argument is not a racist argument that black doctors would be worse, which is what Don Lemon's thinking when he says, well, there's a lot of white doctors and people mess up in the medical field all the time. We're not talking about the race of the people. We're just saying merit should be the number one thing you're looking at.
Actually, the most doctors we have now are they're white female doctors.
Is that true?
Yeah. Females make the majority of physicians now.
Well, is that in total or is that just like new, like start, you know, this year females are more now?
I believe
it's like in total.
I don't know.
I don't know what it is. Okay. And then, I said the other one was not actually dumb bleep because it didn't. Don Lemon did not really imply that Elon Musk was uncomfortable during the interview because Lemon is gay and black. Costco pointed out, well, maybe there's your dumb. Here's the dumb is whoever posted this, I think it was End Wokeness, just totally misrepresented what was in the video. And so that'll be added on to dumb bleep number five. Number six, we had a BLM mob charging at people that were leaving the Kyle Rittenhouse event at the University of Memphis. Before blocking them from leaving the parking garage. Kyle Rittenhouse, I will say, has got some cojones going and doing an event at the University of Memphis, going to any college campus, honestly, when you know how that's going to go. But he is a guy who, took a rifle into a dangerous situation and came out clean on the other side, I guess. So he's got more guts than we do, because Charlie was all over him saying how terrible of a person Kyle Rittenhouse was after this whole thing happened. Just didn't support him whatsoever. Wanted him to go to prison for murder for the rest of his life. So that's not true at all, by the way. If you're listening back in that time, that's not what Charlie said.
That's a joke.
Here's what happened after the event outside. These are just people that are leaving the event, by the way. This is not Kyle Rittenhouse leaving the event. These are just people that were there.
Yeah.
Just so you know. That's one. How about, I already showed that one, showed part of that one. Okay. My general thoughts on this, first off, there is no organism on the planet that has a lower IQ than a crowd of people, in my opinion. Mm. When a crowd of people get together,
they're all dumb.
It's the dumbest thing that happens on the planet at that time. I mean, flocks of birds are smarter than crowds of people that get together. So anyhow, yeah, the mob mentality. Exactly. Mobs are the dumbest groups on the planet.
Well, it provides, you know, an excuse to act in animalistic ways.
I guess it does. Say.
Yeah. Know, because now your deepest thoughts of resentment and bitterness come out because now it's excused because more people like you are doing it.
There's also so many people that you probably won't get held individually responsible for anything that you do or say. And everyone is thinking that at the same time. And everyone feeds off of everyone else's emotions at the same time. This is a guy that was acquitted, by the way. Okay. Not guilty. He killed, I believe, two people died. Is it two people that died and one person was injured? It's been a little bit since we covered this. He defended himself, yeah. Clearly.
It's Costco said he never was guilty.
They attacked him. Yeah, he never was. He's not a murderer. He was never guilty. That it's that simple. But then you still have a mob of people, even though there's plenty of video evidence, a jury decided, all these things, it just doesn't matter. Just literally doesn't matter.
Nope.
They're upset that he killed child molesters. That's it. That's why they got together. Because they're upset that there's less child molesters out there. And that's all I can figure out from this group of people.
Yeah.
Is that they're saddened by the decreased amount of child molesters. So
that must be it.
That's all I can tell.
Yeah.
That must be what they're upset about because that's the only thing that happened. So anyhow, that's number six. Go ahead, Charlie.
I need to make a correction. According to the latest data that I have in 2019, most physicians are not female. They make up about 40%.
Okay.
But they are, most new doctors are female. So
most new doctors are female. Okay.
That's my correction.
I got you.
See, correct myself on the show.
Are most new bricklayers female too?
Nope.
Oh, okay. Mm. That's weird. All right. Number seven.
Chicago is suing Glock over switch that converts pistols to machine guns. A small switch that can be bought for as little as $20 or even 3D printed at home can convert one of the most popular handguns in America into a weapon with machine gun-like power. Now,
actually, it says the same power as the gun ever had.
Now, is this sold by Glock?
No.
Oh,
no.
Interesting.
No, it's not.
While the handgun modification uniquely affects Glock pistols, the manufacturer has done nothing to stop it. The city of Chicago alleged in a new lawsuit against Glock Incorporated. In the complaint filed Tuesday in the Cook County Circuit Court, the city accuses Glock of allowing illegal machine guns to proliferate on the streets of Chicago by selling pistols it knows can be easily modified into a far deadlier weapon with an auto sear. The device, sometimes called a giggle switch or a Glock switch, is about the size of a quarter, cheap to obtain or make at home, and simple to attach. While Chicago has long struggled with an epidemic of gun violence, it is unquestionable that the ease of modification of Glocks and the resulting prevalence of modified Glocks have made the situation worse. Glock also knows it could fix the problem, but has chosen not to, putting profits over public safety and violating the law. The complaint is the first to use the Illinois Firearms Industry Responsibility Act, or FIRA, passed last year. The law allows gun manufacturers to be held accountable for public harm caused by action or inaction from their sales and marketing practices.
Are they marketing that you can get one of these giggle switches?
I think they're getting them on the inaction.
Oh, and what are they supposed to do about people? What
they're supposed to make pistols now that are harder to implement a giggle switch.
Okay.
You know,
so what happens when people make a new giggle switch that accounts for their new modification
changing?
And do they have to remove all of their previous guns that have already been sold? The millions of guns that are out there?
As much as they can. As Mead put it here, pistol recall.
Recall them. Got to get them all off the streets. It's Glock's fault.
It is.
Let's see. There's a little bit more here.
All right. Pistols sold by other major manufacturers are not easily modified the way Glock pistols are. In fact, other manufacturers would require serious engineering or re-engineering, which still happens, by the way.
Yeah, I still do that.
Yeah. Glock did not respond to multiple requests for comment. It does not manufacture or sell auto sears, which are illegal. So they don't manufacture or sell them.
And they're already illegal?
Yeah. The lawsuit claims that some auto sears are marketed and sold with Glock's name and logo, but that there is no evidence Glock has tried to protect its trademark from third-party manufacturers.
Okay, there they go.
Yeah.
There's that.
It alleges that Glock is aiding and abetting the possession of illegal machine guns in Chicago. And in order to prove that claim, we have included all the information that goes to whether Glock has taken the steps you'd expect to see a company to take if it did not want its weapons to be modified. So the Chicago's deputy mayor of community safety said the city has been at a tipping point with Glock switches for a while. There you have it.
They Chicago police have recovered more than 1,100 modified Glocks from 2021 to 2023. How about that?
Yeah.
Wonder how many of those were legally purchased.
It's the gun's fault.
It's definitely the gun. It's the gun manufacturer's fault. It's not the person.
Yeah.
Not the person's fault.
I got to tell you, I have a Glock, or I did have one.
And, a Glock machine gun?
No.
Okay.
I've never modified it.
Glock automatic?
Yeah. I've never tried to modify it. I've taken it apart and cleaned it. And I do like the ease of Glock's simplicity.
Yeah, I don't. That's always, it's scary to me.
Yeah.
But
well, it doesn't come with a level.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. There's no place to put one on. So
that's
the problem. I just wonder if people who, I mean, the manufacturers who say bump stocks work for your gun, you know, what about that? Do they have to change the way that the actual gun itself is made? And the thing is, what if Glock changes this and then someone makes a new one? For that. What are you going to do about that?
Yeah.
Still sue them?
Is it, you know, this, is it Ford's fault that you can install a supercharger into your Mustang to make it go faster and accelerate faster?
Probably.
And lead to death?
Yeah, probably is.
Yeah.
Probably is their fault. In fact,
because they didn't make their Mustangs in a way that couldn't be modified by these superchargers, these turbochargers.
Yeah.
Or whatever, or the fact that you can inject nitrous oxide into their engines.
Yeah.
It's to increase the acceleration.
It's a pretty crazy world out there, man.
Yeah.
Their lawsuit, by the way, seeks to bar Glock from selling modifiable pistols to Chicago residents. So basically, they want Glock to block people in Chicago from being able to buy Glocks. A Glock block is what they call it. So they're Glock blocking. It's probably all illegal immigrants that have them, I bet. Oh, by the way, let's talk about the illegal immigrants having guns. We're not going to spend a lot of time on this because on Wednesday, we spent almost an entire episode talking about whether or not illegal immigrants have the right to have a gun, to the right to bear arms. And we laid out the case that
they do.
They do, because that is an inherent natural right that human beings are born with. We believe that people are innocent. Now you...
And to take away someone's right to bear arms, you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that they have violated someone else's rights.
Yes.
That's the only way you can take people's rights away, due process.
Now, there are two different arguments here. One of them I can respect more than the other. There's one, the argument that illegal immigrants are invading and they're dangerous and you can't have this invading army having guns and they're going to take over America eventually, even though, whatever, even though we have 100 million people in the country that have guns, and we constantly make the argument that that's why we don't get invaded, and that's why we'd be able to take on the government if we wanted to and all that. But these illegal immigrants that are going to have guns, that's definitely going to allow them to overtake the country, whatever. That argument I do not respect whatsoever, because you're saying that if you're scared enough of a group of people having guns, then you should be able to take their guns away. The other argument that I still don't agree with...
Like Jews in Germany.
Yeah.
They were really scary. We should take their guns first.
Or conservatives.
Yeah.
And libertarians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Boogalitarians, stuff like that.
The alt-right.
The other one I respect
domestic
more
terrorists.
Because it's at least on a legal basis. You could say that if you're in a legal argument, then you're essentially a felon because you've committed a felony And so maybe you shouldn't, you don't have the same Second Amendment rights that everyone else would. Problem is, those people haven't gone through the court system. The government has done nothing to prove them guilty whatsoever, even if they are an illegal immigrant. In my opinion, everyone is innocent until proven guilty, and everyone has a natural inherent right to bear arms, to defend themselves and their family. If you want to talk about immigration laws, then let's talk about immigration laws. But that does not mean that you get to go around saying that people don't have the natural right to defend themselves or their property or their family.
Full commentary on Wednesday's episode.
Yes, go back to that.
Number nine.
Okay, we'll get into number nine coming up very shortly. Number nine and 10. And then, of course, the Fed Haters Club is going to be voting on which one of these things that you're hearing about are the dumbest thing from the last week in politics. Well, don't you wish you were able to vote also? You could vote. If you wanted to vote, you'd have to go to joingmail.com. That would bring you to our private Discord server, which we call the Fed Haters Club. The Fed Haters Club puts out these submissions, and then they get to vote on which one is the dumbest, and then maybe they can win a trophy for Dumb Leap of the Year. We'll be right back with the rest of it. What's up, y'all? We're back. It's Liberty Unite with Nate and Charlie on the Free Talk Live Network, coming at you from Nashville, Tennessee. Right now, we are in the middle, towards the end of Dumb Bleep of the Week. That's where our live group, the Fed Haters Club, gets together and votes on the submissions that they mainly put in for Dumb Bleep of the Week. They get the vote. It gets sent into a tournament challenge at the end of the year, and whoever wins Dumb Bleep of the Year gets a trophy. So you want to do that. Number nine, we have not talked about this yet. In NYC, here you go, Charlie.
All right. A fed-up homeowner arrested after tense standoff with squatters stealing a million-dollar house she inherited from her parents. She was arrested.
Yeah. It's pretty ridiculous that squatters' rights is even a thing. And honestly, I didn't realize it was even a thing in America. You've heard about this in, say, Germany, places in Europe, stuff like that. I had never really heard a lot of talk about them in America. Squatters' rights is not a, it's not a thing. That's, it's just not.
It's not a right.
And the
to people, someone else's property.
Yeah, you can't have a right to someone else's property. And the people that are there should be treated like trespassers on your property. And you should try to remove them. And if they resist, then you should use whatever means necessary to remove them from your property. Mm-hmm. See Dumb Bleep number seven.
Yep. All right. A New York City property owner recently ended up in handcuffs following a fiery standoff with alleged squatters who she has been trying to boot from her family's home. Tense footage shows. Adele Andelaro, 47, was nabbed after changing the locks last month on the million-dollar home in Flushing, Queens that she says she inherited from her parents when they died. It's enraging, she said. It's not fair that I, as the homeowner, have to be going through this. Andelaro claims the ordeal erupted when she started the process of trying to sell the home last month, but realized squatters had moved in and brazenly replaced the entire front door and locks. She said she got fed up and went to her family's home on 160th Street with the local TV outlet in tow on the 29th of February and called a locksmith to change the locks for her.
That's crazy to actually get the local TV to come with you on this journey immediately. Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, I didn't have a video pulled up, but I mean, everyone's been talking about this quite a bit, but here's some of this video.
To understand how this day ended,
we need the police right away.
With multiple 911 calls and arrests, we have to start at the beginning.
Adele, the hardest question is, how do you say your name?
We met Adele Andelaro outside the home her parents left her in Flushing, Queens. She's in the process of selling it.
No, he left.
$1 million house.
She's been locked out. She claims squatters moved in on February 6th and refused to leave.
What's it like being here knowing you can't go inside of your own home?
It's enraging. It really is.
In New York, squatters have rights after 30 days.
By the time that someone does their investigation and they do their work and their job, we'll be well over the 30 days, and this man will have stolen my home. And now she's back.
Just after wrapping up our interview, a woman showed up.
What are you doing in the house? Are you renting this house?
I'm not renting this
Why are you here?
She unlocked the front door, saw our cameras, and took off.
It's open. Let's go in the house. It's open.
Adele and her daughter, with the property deed in hand, went inside.
This is my furniture. These are my curtains.
She didn't just find her belongings inside.
There's a man sleeping right there. Get out of my house.
She found two men.
How long have you lived here?
I moved in about 2 days ago.
They've called the police on me, and I've called the locksmith. I didn't come in illegally. The door was open.
Police started interviewing neighbors and looking for documents.
Do you have something that shows that you've been here for more than 30 days?
They took the man who told me he had been renting for 2 days out in handcuffs.
They got one out.
And escorted the other guy off the property.
Now you're afraid to come out.
I'm not coming out. This house is empty. This is my home. My locksmith is on the corner waiting to change my locks. And it's not fair. It's not fair that I, as the homeowner, should be having to go through this.
How you doing?
Minutes later, a locksmith showed up. But police gave her a warning before they left.
I may end up in handcuffs today if this man shows up here and says that I have illegally evicted him. I said to them, let him take me to court the way I've been told to take him to court. But today, I'm not leaving my house.
Less than 10 minutes after police left and the locks were changed. The man who claims to be the one actually leasing the house shows up.
Call the police again.
With the other guy, police took off the property.
Do you see this? This guy just literally broke down my door. Broke through myself and my daughter to get in here. This guy just forced himself into my house.
No, he did not.
Yes, he did.
No, he didn't.
And so did you.
Ma'am.
You broke through the front door.
Officer.
The man called the police on her.
So why is it that I have to leave and he doesn't have to leave?
Because technically he can't be kicked out. You need to go to court.
They consider this a landlord-tenant issue. And by law, it has to be handled through the housing court, not with police.
If you own this house, you would not want her inside.
I don't own the house. I don't own this house.
Exactly. Yes. She does.
Yes. But then once again, you should know how the law works.
I do know how it works.
There's rules to the as you got to go to court and send me to civil court.
He says he signed a lease in October, but wouldn't tell us with who.
I got proof longer than that.
Show us the proof.
But who are you for me to show? I showed it to cops.
Dan with Channel 7 News. If you don't want to show it, you don't want to show it.
Come here, brother. I like Dan.
I would like to see it.
He didn't show me a lease.
This is a bill.
A bill for work he says he had done to the house. He didn't show police a lease either.
The police department doesn't have the lease?
No.
He's got no documentation.
Just bills.
So, Adele, you're getting arrested right now?
I'm being arrested.
For what?
For being in my own home.
And where's your lease?
She's fighting the house. It's not her house anymore.
My deed is current and legal.
Arrested for unlawful eviction. She changed the locks on a man who claims he lives there.
So how does this all end then? When do you leave?
The way it ends is...
I'd be so mad.
I'm mad right now.
Yeah.
I'm not her.
Yeah.
And that guy, when that guy just said it's not her house anymore, I wanted to reach through the screen.
Choke him.
And choke him.
Yeah.
I was going to say other stuff too, but my God.
Ugh.
My God.
Mm. It's so infuriating.
Yeah. I'm too upset right now to even talk about it, but we could say the F of the approach. This is New York. Hey, if this is when to do how you want to do your business, let everyone
but
move
like
away
Dan
from New
said,
York.
It's not just New York. Mm-hmm. It happens all over America.
Yeah. This is just something I hadn't really seen a lot of in the U.S.
My mom works in property management. It happens all the time, even in Carbondale, Illinois. It's so hard to get people out of your property.
I don't understand how it ends up having to go into court when you're the owner of the house. You have not signed any agreement.
And someone
for
broke into your house.
Anything. And it was her parents died. The house was given to her. Probably took her some time to go to the house and start doing things. I don't know. Maybe she didn't live in New York. Maybe she, I don't know where she was. It took
maybe
some time to
grieving.
Go do it. Okay. And so now it seems like there are people that just wait for people to die that go in and start. These people say they're paying rent to someone. Like someone went in and is leasing out someone else's house to people.
I don't think they are. This guy said he did work on the house. I think he did work on the house, realized it was abandoned.
I've heard some other talk about it saying that they were paying to be there. I don't know if they exactly were. But anyhow, it shouldn't matter. The owner of the house did not lease it, is not renting it. There are no tenants. That's just not the... There's trespassers, and there's the owner of the house.
Yeah. This is so
That's
insane.
It. Do you hear that sound?
It's a helicopter.
Okay. We got a helicopter coming in, probably.
Right over the house.
Did you evict someone from this house?
I must have.
Okay. That must be the thing. Anyhow, let's move on to the last one because we got to go. The last one here is Apple. Apple getting sued in a landmark iPhone monopoly lawsuit. The monopoly on iPhones continues.
This is just dumbest of dumb. God bless.
All right. Let's see what we got here. By the way, I got to just start off with the dumbest part. We'll read maybe a little bit of the story, something like that. Guys, part of this
lawsuit, is a day of justice for Android users.
Mm-hmm. Finally. Oh, actually, let's do just a little poll here. We'll see what the percentage is. Apple, no one hit enter. Apple, other, thumbs up on which one you have. Okay, which one you have. You just let us know. I want to know how strong this monopoly goes, okay? Part of this DOJ antitrust lawsuit has to do with iPhone users having blue messages in their text messages if you're using iMessage with another iPhone user, and green messages if you're talking to someone else. And the ability to see if someone else is typing or if the message has been delivered or read or anything like that. The default messaging app on iPhone, then the text appears to the iPhone user as a green bubble and incorporates limited functionality. The conversation is not encrypted. Videos are pixelated and grainy, and users cannot edit messages or see typing indicators. This signals to users that rival smartphones are lower quality because the experience of messaging friends and family who do not own iPhones is worse. Even though Apple, not the rival smartphone, is the cause of that degraded user experience.
Yeah.
Well, then maybe everyone should just switch over to Android.
Right now in our live group, it's 50-50.
Well, that's a monopoly if I ever heard of one. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyhow, many non-iPhone users, now get this. This is part of the DOJ's lawsuit against Apple, one of the biggest corporations in the world. Many non-iPhone users also experience social stigma, exclusion, and blame for breaking chats where other participants own iPhones. This effect is particularly powerful for certain demographics, like teenagers, where the iPhone share is 85%, according to one survey. This social pressure reinforces switching costs and drives users to continue buying iPhones, solidifying Apple's smartphone dominance, not because Apple has made its smartphone better, but because it has made communicating with other smartphones worse.
I don't even know what to say. It's almost like this just, it's almost like not real, you know? Like, I can't believe this is an actual, like, lawsuit.
Uh-huh.
This is actual language.
Now, there's other reasons that they're suing them. This is one of four, I believe. This is the one I found to be the most egregious. Guys, you know, the one previous to this, and this is no accident, the one previous to this had to do with property rights. Okay. This is still property rights right now. This is the same conversation as the last one. We're in the same dumb bleep right now. Only this one has a different number. So it's not the same, but still same, but different. Okay. We're still talking about property rights. We're still talking about the way that Apple wants to make their own operating system and the things that they do in their operating system when communicating with other phones that are using the same operating system. I don't know much about tech, but I do think that the communication between devices that are both using iMessage for their texting and FaceTime for their video calls is going to be different from dealing with phones that are using other apps for that or whatever it is, you know? And so, however they want to make it, to me, it is up to, you know what? If you don't like it, you switch over to Android. Everyone can have an Android phone with your stupid Android text messaging if you want to have that.
Yeah.
I actually know a guy who switched to Apple because of the text messaging. So it's kind of funny.
Which now Android has come out with RCS or RCM or whatever, very similar to iMessages. I can't remember what it's called. Is it RCS, which is called whatever. It has iMessage-like features.
Mm-hmm.
You can message over Wi-Fi and things like that. What happens is, you know, before iMessage, before the iPhone, everyone sent text messages.
SMS
text messages. It was a standard protocol to send messages back and forth between mobile devices. And Apple decided that they wanted to upgrade that between its own users that they could use over Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. Or a cellular network connected to the internet to have different features. And of course, as time went on, other people can't create iMessage because Apple owns iMessage.
Yeah, it's their app.
So when you text an Android user, for the most part, it's still sent through SMS or MMS, which is the video protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've come up with RCS to compete with iMessage. And also to communicate better with iPhones. But it's not Apple's job to make it easier for other smartphones to communicate with it.
No, and I don't even care. Let's just say that they specifically did this, and it is making it more difficult for other phone companies to compete with this messaging or to message the way that iPhones do or whatever the case may be. I still don't care because they can do that if they want to. And people can make their decisions on which one they like better.
Magoo puts this a good way. This is like about not being able to play Xbox games on a PlayStation.
Yeah. Or not being able to buy McDonald's at Hardee's. Or not. I mean, none of these things make sense. Okay.
But Apple has a monopoly on the iPhone.
So that's another case. They keep talking about that. And by the way, I'm an iPhone fan. I'm not knocking the other phones. I had a Windows phone and I had an Android phone.
I think you had a Google Pixel for a while too, didn't you?
No.
Oh,
no,
you thought about it.
No, my first phone was that Palm Pixie. Or my first, like, you know, not flip phone was that Palm Pixie. I love that phone. It was really cool. Went to, I believe, an iPhone. And then I got sick of the iPhone. And I went to a Windows phone. And then I didn't like that. I went to an Android phone. Couldn't figure out how to use it. I just did not understand how to use it.
Mm.
If I need to change something in that phone, I feel like I need to call tech support immediately. I had no clue how to use the phone.
Mm.
And so then I just switched back to an iPhone. I'm not saying that one's better than the other, but if there was one that was better, it would be Apple. So let's talk about this monopoly part. We won't go into all the other parts of this lawsuit because we're running long on time right now. I want to talk to you about whether or not iPhone has a monopoly. And one thing that they'll use is their share of the market. I don't understand how, even in the most extreme case, you can say that Apple has 60% of U.S. smartphone shipments in quarter four of 2023. 60% or 64% is still not a monopoly. Mm-hmm. It just isn't.
No.
It is not a monopoly.
How is it not?
To have 64% of the market.
They have majority. Name.
Versus the other four major companies that there are out there. That is not a monopoly at all. Now, the 64% number, I believe, is wrong. There are other numbers that are much lower. I'll tell you why it's wrong. One is that is market shipments. Now, a shipment means how many were shipped out in this quarter. That does not mean that is the percentage of users in the United States that have that kind of phone. That could simply mean that Apple had a new phone that came out and Android didn't. And so more of the shipments at that time were for Apple's because more Apple users were upgrading their phones and buying new ones. And so you can't just look at the market shipments and say that is the share. When you look at surveys that actually try to get the share, the operating system, the iOS share is 39%. This is not using shipments. This is actually trying to look at how many people in the United States are using iOS versus whatever the other ones are called.
That's still majority, though. That's
more than the others.
It's a majopoly.
It's a majopoly.
Mm-hmm. It's a majopoly, which needs to be stopped.
It's a monojority.
Exactly. Believe.
So still not a monopoly. And not to mention the fact, if I want to, today, I could go down to the phone store And I could say, hey, I want to buy a Google, whatever the best crappy Google phone is that you guys have. I want to buy that. Mm-hmm. And then I'll buy it because there's like 20 or 30 other phones other than the Apple, other than the iPhone that I could get right now if I wanted to.
No one's stopping you.
Way more phones, actually. Than there, you know, iPhones have like two. It's like two phones that there are, you know? It's like a big one and a little one.
They have the Pro and the non-Pro.
The Pro.
So now there's four.
So there's four. Okay, big, yeah. Little, big Pro, little Pro.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. Yeah. So we got four phones.
Yeah.
The other ones, how many different phones? There's 20 phones out there probably, mm-hmm. between all the other companies. Yeah. But Apple has the monopoly, apparently, even though you've got way more choices than them.
And I don't hate on other phones, by the way. I think Samsung or Google or whatever, they have some features that maybe iPhone doesn't have. They've got some quality products. I just don't like it as much.
Yeah.
I prefer the interfacing and the UI and the UX of Apple.
Just my main question is what right do we have as human beings to have certain styles of text messaging? That's one thing I want to know. Like, where is that natural human right that the government is trying to protect? That if an iPhone has little bubbles that pop up when you're chatting with someone who has an iPhone, then gosh darn it, every other person with a phone better have that same thing too. It's just unfair for the iPhone to have that.
They deserve those bubbles.
And so my view is, if Apple wants to have their very own special messaging app called iMessage that all the iPhones have, then that's what they can do. If they wanted to make it where you couldn't talk to anyone who didn't have an iPhone at all, then do it.
Do you know who owns the number one messaging app, by the way, worldwide?
Who's that?
Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
It's WhatsApp.
So everyone could just get on WhatsApp and talk the same as everyone else right now.
Yeah.
They could get on Instagram
Messenger.
Literally
download WhatsApp to your iPhone,
mm-hmm.
or your Android.
And by the way,
and communicate over Wi-Fi. You can have video calls. Could do everything you wanted.
Why would you use some kind of spyware technology like that when you could use Freedom Chat, though?
Exactly.
Because you could just download the app Freedom Chat. And it's available for Android users and iPhone users. And you can talk on Freedom Chat, everyone the same way, and you can't take screenshots. You can't download media that someone else sends you without their permission. It's completely encrypted, like quantum safe encryption. They don't store anything on their servers. Like, why don't we all just fix this problem that the DOJ is apparently concerned about with these texting inequalities, inequities between people, and everyone just downloads Freedom Chat, and that's what we all use to talk back and forth with one another.
Amen. I like that idea.
All right, everyone, get your votes in. Get your votes in now. All right, let's run back through them right quick. You're right. We should do that. Number one was the omnibus. Number two is the deep state's actually kind of awesome. Number three is the bloodbath controversy from last weekend. Number four was that MAGA Ukraine guy. Number five was the Don Lemon gay black. Number six was Kyle Rittenhouse, University of Memphis thing. Number seven was Chicago suing Glock. Number eight was immigrants having the right to bear arms. Illegal immigrants having the right to bear arms. Number nine was the squatters' rights. Number 10 is the DOJ suing Apple. Number nine, squatters' rights, is the winner.
Nope.
It's already decided. It's an overwhelming vote.
This was a tough one, though, because
with 5% of the votes in, we're calling the election for squatters' rights. Because our live group knows how ridiculous of an idea it is that someone can just come into your house, which you own, and decide that you can't kick them out. It is absolutely ridiculous that in America, that is even something that we need to talk about. Property rights are the main thing that made America different from the rest of the nations out there. It's why America prospered so much in comparison to all of the other countries around the world, was because we respected and valued property rights. And it's really sad to see that going away. There were a lot of other don't bleep ideas that were really good, a bunch of them, okay? And of course, I have to tell you that if you want to hear us talk about these things in detail, because on Don't Bleep of the Week, we spend, you know, a few minutes on each one of these topics. So we're not able to get real in-depth on them. if you want to hear us talk more about each one of these items throughout the week, well, then you want to go find our podcast that we do every single day of the week when we want to, which is called Good Morning Liberty. That's where you'll find Charlie and me every single day of the week. Like I said, we just released episode 1202. So you want to take the 1202 episode challenge. That's where you listen to every single one of those episodes so you can be fully up to date on all of our beliefs and the way that we cover every single thing. Because as some would say, we don't just talk about these ideas in a vacuum. They all connect to each other. These things all correlate. They all have to do with property rights. They all have to do with the right to self-ownership. And so all of these things truly are connected. I hope you enjoyed tonight's show, Liberty at Night show. Of course, if you're not listening to us on Good Morning Liberty, you can hear us every single Tuesday night where we go by the name Liberty at Night on the Free Talk Live Network. Until next Tuesday night, y'all be good. We'll see you then.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.